Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for July 19th, 2022. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And I'd like to announce that we're going to go these earlier items a little bit out of order of what we normally do. So I will go ahead with my announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public, got distracted by the screen on my table. Members of the public, members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Reminder to those who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. Please turn on your cameras while presenting and turn them off when your item is complete. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item 3. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public, so I will say there are public comment cards on the table outside. We've received some already. It would make it easier for the board secretary to expedite the public comments. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. Director Colley will be participating tonight's meeting via Zoom as I requested. We can now move to item 2, Pledge of Allegiance. I would ask Director Cooper, if he would be so kind as to lead us in the pledge, please stand.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Cooper. In memory of Vice President Gladbach, I'd like to ask that we all take a moment of silence, which will be about a minute, in honor of Vice President Gladbach. I was intending to say that while we were standing, so if you would be so kind as to rise again. Thank you. Please be seated. Our board secretary has put together a very nice program to allow us all to honor Vice President Gladbach in his passing. I would ask now that each member of the board who wishes to do so, please select a flower from the table to Director Ford's left in front of Mr. Cole and place it at Vice President Gladbeck's seat. After that, I will be asking members of the staff who wish to do so to do the same thing. And following that, any member of the public who wishes to do so may do so at that time. So at this time, I'd like members of the board who wish to place a flower, please begin to do so. Members of the staff who wish to do this, please proceed. Members of the public who are present and wish to participate in this, please come forward and place your flower. Thank you all very much. At this time, we'd like any member of the public who wishes to make a comment as to the passing of Jerry Gladbeck, you may do so at this time. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less, as regular public comments will be limited, and we cannot allow for these comments to not abide by the same rule. So. We'll go in the same order. Members of the board wish to make a public comment with regard to Jerry's passing, please do so. Vice President Ozahusky.
I would like to talk about Vice President Jerry Gladbeck's influence and his influence in our valley. and across the state of California is gargantuan. I have only served 2 years with Vice President Jerry Glanbeck. Therefore, I think it would be most appropriate to read a testimonial from the CEO of California Special District Association, who has worked with Jerry Glanbeck for over 20 years. Quote, I've had the pleasure of working with Mr. Glanbeck over the last 20 plus years and have learned so much from his extensive experience as a district board member. At the California Special District Association, he was one of our main governance subject matter experts that helped to develop our Special District Leadership Academy curriculum, now used to train thousands of elected appointed officials from special districts. His insights and experience are highly valued in the special district community, and his leadership at the statewide and local levels throughout the years brings forward the best in governance practices to the benefit of his district's constituents. This was Neil McCormick, Chief Executive Officer, California Special District Association. I would like the Glanbeck family to take comfort in the fact that Jerry Glanbeck has developed learning modules for all locally elected public officials in California. And each of these elected officials that finish these modules will carry Jerry Glanbeck's teachings with them to their communities. Therefore, Jerry's influence will continue to live on. Thank you. Thank you, President Martin.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. So first off, I want to share my deep condolences to Vice President Glanbeck's family and close friends. I truly understand and relate when I hear the stories about how kind of a person he has always been, because he was nothing but kind to me when I came on board and was learning the ropes here as a new board member. And he was always very respectful to me, and I will always appreciate that. I'll just share a super quick story about how that played out at one time. During one of our public outreach and legislation committee meetings, back when we were still meeting on Zoom before we resumed in-person meetings, he made a joke about something. I don't remember what it was. And I guess I was muted because he didn't hear me laughing along with him. And so after our meeting was over, he immediately called me on my cell phone and wanted to make sure that I wasn't offended by what he had said in his joke. And I said, no, it was fine. And we laughed about it. And then we wrapped up with some more pleasantries during the conversation. And so I think that's one example of what a kind person he was. He wanted to make sure that I wasn't offended, I wasn't uncomfortable. And so I always appreciated that too. I really wish that I had taken time to learn from him more because of his very deep and wide amount of knowledge that he had gained over his career and his experience. And so I very much regret not having learned more from him in my first years on the board. So thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Director Plamba.
Yeah, I would like to echo what everybody has said about Jerry being such a gentleman. He, you know, my folks were both Republicans, and so I grew up in a Republican family in the old style, where when you didn't agree with someone, you didn't shout or call them names. You had discussions with them, and you greeted them. You said, hello, how are you? You know, you had respect, and that is what Jerry always did. Whenever anybody came into the room, it was no matter what your side of the argument or what your side of the aisle is, he always greeted you, and he always made you feel welcome, and he always made you feel included. And I think that was such an important characteristic that he had, and I was always very grateful to that for him for that. And I want to say, when somebody passes quickly like this, it's shocking to everyone, but I think it's most difficult for the family, and my heart just goes out to Donna. My mother died really suddenly from a ruptured aneurysm, and it was so hard to deal with. And I guess you just have to remember that he's going to a wonderful place. And hopefully there was not that much pain as he left. And Donna, my heart's with you and the rest of his family.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Kelly.
Jerry had an infectious smile, as we all know. He loved people. He enjoyed life. And I think he was a tremendous mentor and teacher in general to all of us. But one comment I'd like to make is that the key word comes to me for Jerry, and that's dedication. He was dedicated to his family, his community, and the water industry. And Jerry, I hope you continue to look over all these aspects that you enjoyed during your life and shine upon us. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Director Bronstein.
Well, I'm getting a little emotional, so I apologize in advance. As many people are going to probably stand up and talk about him, about all the amazing things he did. Sorry. What's up? You want? I'm going to skip this. I'm going to let somebody else talk.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. You know, Jerry was a friend, and he was somebody that I got to know, I guess, gosh, I've known Jerry for almost 30 years. And Jerry was probably, like RJ said, too, is the most dedicated and driven person that I've ever seen. He worked harder in retirement than most people work in their working career. He did his work without fanfare. Jerry participated at a high level in just lots of organizations, and he wasn't looking for fanfare. He wasn't looking for accolades. He did it because the things that he did were right for the community and right for the water interests of the community. And that's what he took very importantly. You know, Jerry served as in Aqua, he served in a number of positions and committees and over the years, but finally headed up as president of the Association of California Water Agencies, representing about 90% of all the water agencies in the state of California, and did an excellent job, helped build the blueprint for California water that was put together that we still use in putting together water plans for California. He was president of the Los Angeles County LAFCO, Local Agency Formation Commission. Not only was he president of LA County, but he went on to be president of the state LAFCO. And from there, he was also on the board of directors of the National Water Resources Association in Washington, D.C. Jerry didn't come back and want fanfare about all the things that he did, but he made quite an impact there. I know the impacts that he made in Aqua and how he had a way of bringing them back to reality in some cases. He helped this agency greatly. Our venture into Sites Reservoir is because of Jerry. Jerry brought it back and said, hey, here's something we need to get involved in. At first, I thought, oh, man, that's way over our head and a whole lot of money. But, boy, I'm glad now we're in this. And Jerry saw the need for it. He had the vision of what this agency was going to need in the future. He was a true gentleman. He was always extremely nice. He helped me and mentored me in lots of issues. We've always called him the true Energizer Bunny, because not only was he head of all these organizations, he did it all at the same time. He's still head of the Joint Powers Authority, the Insurance Authority of State LAFCO, heavily involved in Aqua. And he does all these at the same time. When he was president of Aqua, kind of a funny thing, you know, the board, all of us just loved Jerry. And we thought at one time when we went to the Aqua Conference, we were all going to get T-shirts that said Jerry's Kids on them. And because we were, we all followed Jerry, and he was the water leader of the bunch. And he is going to be missed. He's a good friend, and he will be missed as a friend. And my heart goes out to Donna and the family. This is a very difficult time for them. But he was just a true, gentle person that I enjoyed.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Gusite.
I won't repeat much of what's been said, which is absolutely true. He was a man of quiet but important service, and I do think that we need more of that these days. I'm going to try to not cry as well. My heart goes out to his family, and I will share a story that speaks to how he operated, which is by relationships. And he was, although he was quiet and not self-promoting, he succeeded through his relationships. And we were considering endorsing a candidate for Aqua president. And it was actually a contested race. I know people sometimes think these things wouldn't be contested. They're all arranged in advance. He was supporting a lady who had very good qualifications, as did the candidate she was opposing. But he said to me, he goes, "Maria, I want you to know that she rescues dogs. And, you know, people that rescue dogs have good hearts." And so I feel like he got to know people. And that's how he succeeded. And I think that we should learn from that. I will miss him.
Thank you, Director Gusite. Have we? Director Ford.
Thank you, President Martin. I would echo what everybody said. I mean, I would wonder sometimes about his stamina and say, "Jerry, don't you rest? You know, you're constantly traveling for the benefit of the people in this valley." And, I mean, I can't imagine anybody who did the sum total of service better or with a better heart than he did. I think everybody here related to him as a member of the board. I just have a brief story about being a member of staff. We were putting in two solar plants, and candidly, Jerry's a little old school and he knows something about power. And so he would fix me across the table at Water Resources and like say, "Okay, Jeff, explain this to me, would you?" And you couldn't fool him at all. But at the same time, he worked with a velvet glove and got me on the straight and narrow, and we clarified some things. And in the end, we wound up getting his support, which I was honored to have. And I will miss him terribly. And my heart also goes out to his family. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Ford. Madam Secretary, is Director Colley online? And I'd like to ask if he would like to make his comment at this time.
He is, but he doesn't have his hand up. All right.
Well, yeah, I too, everything that everybody has said, Jerry has always been the most gentleman I can imagine anyone being. Thinking back, I can remember only one time in 20 years where he ever even seemed to be slightly annoyed with goings on. It never happened. And that one time sticks out in my mind only because it was so unique. And he expressed his opinion on potholing, and then we moved on. But he's been a good friend to all of us, and me included. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley. Before we go to some of the invited guests and the guests who have come to speak on Jerry's behalf, I'd like to make a comment. There are a few things that shock me more and hurt me more than hearing from Donna that Jerry had passed.
there's at that point in your life, there's just no words to describe how you feel. And I've said it numerous times since the day that I got the news. Jerry can't be gone. Jerry's too big. Jerry's too important. Jerry is Jerry. I was very proud to be one of Jerry's kids, as Director Cooper said. When you go to Aqua and Jerry introduces you to someone, they know you. And you have instant credibility because Jerry has introduced you. I've seen Jerry stand up in a hall of 1,500 people and nominate a candidate for one of the Aqua officers that wasn't nominated by the Aqua board. And I always refer to that voice as the voice of God. Jerry standing up, here comes the voice of God. And I'll be darned if that person didn't win the office. And it happens happened many, many times. Jerry's accomplishments in water and on our agency, the list is too long. 37 years, imagine that, 37 years this community has benefited from Jerry Gladbach's presence on the CLWA and now the SCV Water Board. It's a huge void. It's a huge void that's going to be very hard to fill. And I would suggest to anyone who would wish to honor Jerry in their life going forward, I think one of his greatest characteristics, and I think it's been brought up in a different kind of way tonight, Jerry didn't agree with everyone. Jerry didn't agree with every director on issue, but he was never disagreeable. So we can disagree and not be disagreeable. And I think if we carry that thought forward, that we can work together as colleagues, as friends, as people who all of us want the best for the Santa Clara Valley and the people we serve. But we can do it in a civil, I'll say gentlemanly, ladies don't take offense at that, but you know what I mean. Be kind to one another, be respectful of one another. And I think that would honor Jerry's memory just about more than anything we can do. And so with that, I'd like to ask. Oh, we do have another director online who would like to say something. Director BJ Atkins. I'm sorry, BJ. I didn't mean to go ahead of you. I didn't know you were going to be available if I remote tonight. So go ahead, BJ.
Thank you, President Martin. You're always a hard act to follow. Jerry, what you've described, all of you've described very, very well. And what you're describing is a perfect ambassador, a diplomat, if you will. And that's what he's been for SCV Water for 37 years. I consider him one of my very favorite mentors in water. He forgot more about water than I probably will have learned or will ever learn. And you're right. He is, JPIA is going to miss him. Aqua is going to miss him. LAFCO is going to miss him. Especially SCV Water is going to miss him. But nothing is going to compare to how Donna and the family is going to miss him. And Donna, I'm speaking to you. Jerry's now out of pain. He's in a really special place. And I want to make sure that you know that God is blessing Jerry now. And God is in control. And this is something that it was a stunner for all of us. And I don't want to take more than my 3 minutes because I'm calling in as a member of the public. I will not be attending the entire meeting. I'm here on vacation with my family. And this is planned months and months ago. And I have three generations here and they're in the next room. But I want Donna to know that he is in a very special place and he is out of pain and it's going to be okay. God bless you all. Thank you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Enjoy your time with your family. All right. I'm going to start with, by the way, anybody here will have an opportunity to speak. So, but we do have a representative from Congressman Garcia's office, Field Director Charles Navarro.
He's here virtually. So go ahead and make your comment, Mr. Navarro.
Mr. Navarro, you may begin your public comment.
There we go. My apologies. I was muted. President Martin and fellow directors, thank you for allowing me to speak before you and the community to express the congressman's condolences to Jerry's wife, Donna, their family, to you all in the community. While it's always sad when we lose a member of our great community, this is a tremendous loss for us all. Through his decades of public service and expertise he brought to the board, there aren't enough thank yous to be said for someone like Jerry. We pray Donna and the rest of their family members can be proud of the life Jerry lived because the entire Santa Clarita community is internally grateful. So thank you all again, and we appreciate being given this opportunity to recognize the tremendous work by Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Navarro. At this time, I'd like Chris Huff, our good friend Chris Huff from Senator Scott Wilk's office, to come forward and make her comment.
Good evening, everybody. Again, Chris Huff, I work for State Senator Scott Wilk, and thank you for having me here tonight to speak about Jerry Gladbach. I am honored to be able to pass on the senator's sentiments about Jerry. He considered him a friend. So on behalf of the senator, I'm going to read his comments. I'm very sad to learn about the passing of SCV Water Board member Jerry Gladbach. He was not only a friend, but a mentor when it came to water policy. With a 60-year career in all things water, Jerry was my go-to for industry intel. Santa Clarita Valley would not have blossomed into the community it's become without Jerry's vision and expertise. This community will miss him, and so will I. My condolences go out to his beautiful wife, Donna, and to their three children and six grandchildren. And then personally, for me, I've known Jerry for many years through my many careers in Santa Clarita Valley. He was a lovely, kind-hearted man, and I valued his leadership and his wisdom. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Senator Wilk. At this time, I would like to ask another good friend of the agency, Patsy Ayala, to come forward as representative from Assemblywoman Suzette Valadares' office.
Thank you, President Martin. I am attending on behalf of Assemblywoman Valadares to honor the memory and outstanding work of Jerry Gladbach. Santa Clarita lost a dear friend and a vital member of our water board. Jerry was one of the most knowledgeable and accomplished water professionals in the state, and we were very fortunate to have him serving in the Santa Clarita community for the last 37 years. Jerry was a big cheerleader and a champion, providing reliable, high-quality water for our community. Jerry was a leader in a state and national water organizations. This is a loss not only for the Santa Clarita, but for the state of California. Assemblywoman Valadares sent his special in memoriam for his family, honoring the life of Jerry, to pay tribute to him on behalf of the State of California Assembly. By the way, if I can say more, he was a gentleman and a true leader in our Santa Clarita community. He will always be remembered. Thank you.
Thank you, Patsy. Thank you, Assemblymember Valadares. And we can now, I'd like to ask Natalie Vartanian, representing our 5th District Supervisor, Catherine Barker, come forward.
Thank you, President Martin, and thank you for allowing me to speak today on behalf of Supervisor Catherine Barker. Supervisor would like to extend her deepest condolences to Jerry's wife, Donna, his three children and six grandchildren. As has been said today, Jerry had a long, long, long history of service to the Valley, to the state on a federal level. Since being elected to the then Castaic Lake Water Agency in 1985, and also serving on various state and national water organizations, he truly has set a high standard. And President Martin, you had mentioned, you know, how can a person so great be gone? I think it's appropriate to say that his legacy will live on for a long, long time, forever. And his wisdom will be passed on to many generations to come. Recently in 2021, he was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award by the California Association of Local Agency Formation Commissions, California LAFCO, for his long history on the board and years of service. So we send our deepest condolences. Thank you. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Supervisor Barger. I'd like to ask at this time for the Santa Clarita, City of Santa Clarita Mayor Pro Tem Jason Gibbs to come forward.
Good evening, President Martin and fellow directors. My name is Jason Gibbs. I am the Mayor Pro Tem for the City of Santa Clarita. Tonight, however, I am here as a resident of Santa Clarita and a friend of Jerry Gladbach, but I do believe the city will make sure to honor Jerry's memory as well when we come back. I wanted to share my condolences to Jerry's wife, Donna, their children and grandchildren, and to all of you on this board and to our entire community for the sudden and tragic loss that we have now experienced with Jerry's passing. What he has done for this community and for the state in regards to water is something that we should all seek to memorialize, honor, and remember. While there are others tonight who are here who are far more qualified to speak to Jerry's contributions to Santa Clarita and to this agency, I simply want to share that Santa Clarita lost a true gentleman, a dear friend, and a man who was always kind and warm to the people around him. Jerry was one of the first elected officials that I ever sat with when I began my own journey into local politics. And if by the time I am done, if I was able to contribute simply a fraction of what Jerry has given us all, I'd consider my time to be a true success. Jerry is and will be forever missed, but not forgotten. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Gibbs. At this time, I'd like to ask Tony Maldonado, who is the California Congress of Republicans Division 8 Vice President, to come forward.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tony Maldonado. I'm a resident of Santa Clarita, a public advocate, a non-lawyer, president of the Santa Clarita Valley Congress of Republicans, and regional VP of the California Congress of Republicans. I'm also a friend and mentee of Mr. Jerry Gladbach. To say that Jerry's passing is a loss to us all would be a major understatement, as Jerry was bigger than being a board member of the Santa Clarita Water Agency. In my humble opinion, Jerry was greater than all of his accomplishments and appointments within the state. Jerry was not only a neighbor, a friend, a colleague, and a mentor to many, but a genuine salt of the earth who inspired greatness from us all in a way that hardly exists these days. Jerry was a unicorn in today's society, as he held so many qualities that many of us would wish to hold, let alone master. With a huge smile, a firm handshake, and a genuine desire to engage with others, Jerry was a selfless being, willing to listen and to give advice whenever warranted. He had the art of knowing what to appropriately say, at the right time. Jerry was a true gentleman and a leader, someone we could and can aspire to emulate. Never overbearing, narcissistic, or intentionally calling attention to himself, unlike some of our world today that call for attention, yet never being of quality or having any substance, Jerry commanded attention and listening by his simple ways of never dressing anyone down or making himself known to be the expert. Instead, Jerry was a kind individual that respected everyone, even those he quietly disagreed with. He mastered the art of consensus. Jerry inspired everyone to their better angels, as being civil and genuine were some of his character traits. Always a humble individual who preferred honest conversations to idle nonsense chatter. With great interest, he engaged in deep conversations that gave life lessons without being lecturing. I'm extremely grateful for Jerry's encouragement to keep pursuing and pushing forward despite a world so engrossed over itself. Never would I not make time to listen to or speak with Jerry, as he had always had very good insight on what was going on, whether it involved water, our community, politics, or the state of the world. Maybe it's the Miss Westerner in him that made him so unique in a sea of California confusion, as whenever he walked into a room, the world lit up around him. I shall miss Jerry's smile, advice, encouragement, and overall good nature. I am certain that he will be greatly missed by his wife, Donna, his children, his grandchildren, neighbors, community members, and peers, as I know I shall miss him just the same. However, despite the great loss we have encountered and the great vacuum we now have, I am encouraged by the fact that although Jerry is no longer physically here with us, Jerry shall forever remain in our hearts, minds, and spirits. May he rest in peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony, very much.
At this time, I'd like to ask another great friend of the Water Agency, Charlene Johnson, to come forward. Charlene is the chair of the 38th Central Committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Charlene Johnson, and last Thursday was definitely a day that I can remember because I remember getting that phone call that Jerry was no longer with us, which I think shocked us all. Something that I live with in my life as motto, and I think it's very applicable to say to Jerry, is the meaning of life is finding your gift, and the purpose of it is giving it away. This was his gift. This was his baby. This was his love. This was his passion. But it wasn't just for him. It wasn't just for his family. It was for everyone. And every single person that I have talked to, because I wanted to find out a little bit more about the amazing things that he did, said he left such a void. A void on multiple levels, on different committees, serving as chairs. But one of the most important things that we have to remember as part of leadership is that there's two scales to that. Leadership is not just attending a board meeting. It's not just listening to the dialogue. It's serving in a capacity outside of these walls. And he lived it day in and day out. And not only did he live it, but his family did, with his absence at home, but then bringing all of his concerns back to them and getting their counsel. We are very, very thankful for not only his service, but his family's service. And my heart goes out to his family, because I don't think you can ever replace that missing piece of your family, but also the service that he did for the Santa Clarita Valley. So with that, I'd like to thank him and his family for the service that they provided to the Santa Clarita Valley and the SEV Water Agency. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlene. At this time, I'd like to have, I guess I would kindly refer to this gentleman as one of Jerry's kids. He may not agree with that, but former general manager of the Castaic Lake Water Agency, agency, Dan Mastronata, absolute water warrior for many, many years in this valley.
Mr. President, members of the board, thank you very much for the opportunity. I've had the privilege of knowing Jerry throughout my entire career in water. I served on the CLWA board of directors with him in the late 80s and the early 90s. And then for almost 14 years, I worked for him and the rest of the board as CLWA's general manager. He was exceedingly personable, and as you've heard many a time this evening, and a true gentleman. He was a consummate professional. He was passionate about public service. And for me personally, he was a mentor, the best kind of mentor. He mentored by example. He talked the talk, and he walked the walk. It's only appropriate that we recognize Jerry at the same time the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is being played. For those of you that follow baseball, Albert Pujols, who played for the Cardinals, the Angels, and the Dodgers, is being recognized as the Iron Man of baseball of today's game. At 42, he's played baseball for 21 years, half his life. Jerry's length of service on the board puts Albert's record to shame. For almost four decades, he worked tirelessly to ensure water flowed each and every time Santa Clarita Valley residents and businesses turned on their taps. He was our Iron Man. He was our all-star, or he was the board's all-star. Most of you are familiar with Jerry's history. However, some of you may not be familiar with the following fact. Having spent what amounts to two different careers, one as an employee of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power on the power side, and one as director of our local water agency, he was known by two different first names. If you worked with him or were acquainted with him in his electrical role, he was Ed. And of course, in his water role, he was Jerry. More to the point, he was our Jerry. Water has been the Santa Clarita Valley's lifeblood for a long time, first for agriculture and then for what has become the third largest city in Los Angeles County. Jerry was instrumental in preserving, protecting, and augmenting the valley's lifeblood in a manner that both enhanced our quality of life and protected our natural environment. Metaphorically speaking, water flowed through Jerry's veins, which I'm sure he would acknowledge as the ultimate compliment. Carol and I express our sincerest condolences to Don and their families. I'm sure Jerry is not watching the All-Star game right now. He's instead looking down on us with great satisfaction of a job well done and a proud legacy well established. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. As Director Atkins said, where Jerry is now, the Cardinals will be in first place every year. So I'd like to read to you a comment, written comment that we received from Kathy Norris, CEO and President of the Valley Industrial Association. She couldn't be in attendance, but she did send a comment to be read tonight, so I will read it. Please accept our sincere apologies for being unable to attend in person tonight. Valley Industrial Association extends its sincere condolences on the loss of Jerry Gladbach. His loss is a great one for both his family and for the community. We thank you for allowing us to pay tribute to Jerry for his decades-long contributions and his enduring community spirit. It was an honor to know him and a great pleasure to work with him. He will be truly missed. At this time, before I ask other members of the public who haven't spoken, if they'd like to come to the podium and speak on behalf of Jerry, I follow up on Mr. Masnada's comments. More than once, Dan has defended our water supply picture in Santa Clarita as being able to meet demands through the full build up and year 2050. And I often said, well, only Jerry will be on the board then. We'll all be gone. But he beat us to the exit. But God rest his soul. Is any other member of the public who is in attendance who would like to come forward and speak on behalf of Jerry Gladbach? We will handle other item 3 public comments not related to Jerry Gladbach following this. Any other members of the public? Madam Secretary, would you have anybody online who wants to speak on behalf of Jerry at this time?
We do not.
All right. All right. Let's go back to the regular agenda.
Mr. President?
Yes, Director.
It makes one wonder what organizations in heaven Jerry's going to be in charge of by the time we get there.
Thank you for that, BJ. It does, sir. All right. We do have public comment cards for item 3 that don't relate to Director Gladbach. One is from Cam Noltemeyer. Mr. Noltemeyer, would you like to come to the podium and make your public comment?
Cam Noltemeyer, of course, I was in a meeting last night where we reminisced and about him. So that's why I didn't come up earlier. And what I'm hoping is that I know of one thing that he started, and I'm hoping to watch it and see if it really happens. That's what I'm going to remember him by. If that does go through, I've documented how he started it, and hopefully it will come true someday for him. And I know you've put in a long time now, and so I won't take any more of your time. But yes, I'm very aware of him and what he's done and what he's been trying to do right now. And I think some of you should be aware of that too. Things I've gotten kind of out of kilter here, I think, as far as the water company. And it needs to change. And I think that was one of his ideas too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Before we take the other item three public comments, I'd just like to tell the audience and the board that we'll be taking a 5-minute break after these next two public comments on item three. For those of you who may wish to go on and leave following the public comment, I just want to let you know. With that, Ed Dunn, if you'd like to come to the podium and make your item three public comment.
Well, good evening. With the mood we've set tonight, it's very difficult to come up with suggestions to try to have improvement to our water supply. But timing is of the essence, and I wanted to speak to where we could find additional drinking water. So since we're being told to cut back, and this agency has wasted quite a bit of our drinking water on different situations, the largest one being Central Park, when they took it over and the farmers previously had drilled ag wells, the ag wells were there and that would have been good for us. They could pump water for $160 an acre foot electrically, and that we would have for every acre foot. CLWA insisted they purchased the water from the Santa Clarita Water Company at $1,000 an acre foot and use drinking water or potable water from the park. And so that wasn't very practical. Then Shangri-La area had a well leaking and damaging property. They drilled a well there and that water came out. It was not contaminated water. They threw it in the river. There was a second one similar to that and they threw that one in the river. And then the big project actually was cleaning the water at Bermite because it was contaminated water. And so Bermite's insurance had to clean it. So it was coming out of there as drinking water by the thousands of acre foot. And this agency threw the water in the river. And so some people said, well, why is this happening? And the theory seemed to be they're holding it for a development project west of us. And that they want to have water because that project doesn't have enough water. So I wanted all you people to know, and that's the timing is of the essence, because you can start making some switches there and even use the water, instead of just throwing the water in the river like the Shangri-La water, you could put it in our medians because the pipes are right nearby. And it's just costing us almost nothing, and it isn't wasting up all the drinking water that's used in Central Park that can go into our regular system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Joan Dunn, would you like to come to the podium?
Good evening. Well, Jerry, we knew him for a lot of years. We knew him when he had a cuckoo clock that needed fixing. And that's a lot of years ago. And that's when he was still married to Rena. And we knew him for so long that we knew how he was. He was a gentle person. There's a new movement going on, and it's called Holy Moments. And you can have a bad one or you can have a good one. And I do remember one holy moment that was a bad one for Jerry. But I forgive him for that, but he has many good holy moments. I don't know if you heard about this movement, but they are trying to get people to smile more, to act more like real people, to be kind to each other. And I would like to see more of that, really. But tonight, I have a couple things I want to talk about. Maria Gutzeit got paid before she became before she took her oath. Why would she get paid for that. She wasn't a director yet. Then the second thing is, it was a thing again, I've talked about Mr. Pexy, where he was in another state. He didn't live here anymore, and he was still voting. And some of you must have known that. Well, Mr. Atkins is registered in another city. Not even, it's closer to San Diego, and he's still on this board. Why? Why is he doing this? He shouldn't even be voting because he's not going to be living here. He isn't a citizen. He's registered in another city. So why is he still here, and why is he still voting? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. And with that, I'd like to take a brief recess. We'll say 5 to 10 minutes, and we'll try to regroup and come back to carry on the rest of the agenda. We are now in recess. We are now back in session, and we can move on to item 4, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, or modifications to the agenda from the board? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved. We can move to item 5, which is a presentation on the public health goal report. Water quality specialist Jenny Anderson and water quality supervisor Ryan Bai and water quality specialist Dean Takashima will make the presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, please proceed with your presentation.
Hello, I'm Ryan Bai. I'm now the water system supervisor here at SCV Water. I'm joined tonight by with Jenny Anderson and Dean Takashima. Together, we are presenting the public health goal report. April, do you have the slides up, or am I pulling those up?
Nope, I've got them. We're just having a little trouble moving them over. Give me just a minute.
Oh, no problem. While April's moving the slides over, I can just speak to just how the layout of this presentation will go. I'll give a brief overview of what the public health goal report is, and then Jenny will get into the regulatory aspect of it and cover the first half of the chemicals we're going to be looking at. Dean's going to finish up the second half of chemicals. And then at the request of some board members, there's some additional water quality information that we will cover at the tail end, being the consumer confidence report, the UCMR monitoring, and some information about PFAS. Next slide, please. So the purpose of the public health goal report is to provide information about levels of contaminants found in drinking water supply that are above the public health goals. And Jenny will, in detail, talk about what the public health goals are. But in essence, the public health goal report is an attempt to be a little bit more transparent to our board and to our customers. Next slide, please. So it is the responsibility of public water systems that are greater than 10,000 connections to complete this report. They prepare a brief written report every 3 years. So this report will cover the years of 2019 to 2021. That'll be the data that we're going to be looking at. Another aspect is once that report is completed and submitted to the Division of Drinking Water, we as public water systems must hold a public meeting explaining the report. And this is in compliance with Health and Safety Code Section 116470 Part B. You'll notice that it says all water systems greater than 10,000 connections. We are SCV Water, but the way that the Division of Drinking Water looks at us, we are still the legacy systems. So the only water systems that must submit these public health goal reports are the Valencia Water Division and the Santa Clarita Water Division. The four systems under the Newhall Water Division, the Castaic System, the Newhall System, the Pine Tree System, and the Tesoro System do not meet this requirement. But in keeping in with the idea of transparency and cohesion in coming together as one agency, we have included information from the Newhall Water Division systems as well. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Jenny Anderson, who will cover the next section.
Next slide, please. So there are some definitions and acronyms that will be used throughout the report that will be helpful to go over. Public health goals are non-enforceable health-based goals established by the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, or OEHA. Public health goals have health risks that are set at the no observable adverse effects level, NOEL, and are often theoretical and assumptions and mathematical extrapolations. So public health goals are not regulatory standards. However, the state law requires that the State Water Resource Control Board to set drinking water standards for chemical contaminants as close to the corresponding public health goal as economically and technologically feasible. So in calculating a public health goal, the Cal EPA Department of OEHA uses the information it has compiled to identify the level of a chemical in drinking water that would not cause significant adverse health effects in people who drink the water every day for 70 years. OEHA must also consider any evidence of immediate and severe health effects when setting the public health goal. Next slide. So maximum contaminant levels are MCLs, the highest level of contaminant that is allowed in drinking water. MCLs are set as close to the MCLGs as feasible using the best available treatment technology and taking cost into consideration. They are the regulatory definition of what is considered safe, and MCL standards are enforceable. Next slide, please. Health effects based on MCLs. The US EPA identified a lifetime reference risk range in 1 in 10,000 to 1 in a million. A reference risk range refers to the chance of a person has of developing an illness due to a lifetime exposure to the contaminant at a given concentration. These levels are set at a considered safe and protective to human health. Next slide, please. Maximum contaminant level goals, or MCLGs. So this is the level of a contaminant in drinking water below which there is no known or expected risk to health. MCLGs allows for a margin of safety and are non-enforceable public health goals. MCLs and MCLGs are set by the USPA, whereas the public health goal is set by OEHA. The EPA sets an MCL, and the state can either adopt the MCL or they can enforce a more stringent one that is often the case that we see here in California. Next slide, please. So some further definitions, the action level. Action level is a health-based advisory level established by the EPA for chemicals in drinking water that lack an MCL. This is used for constituents such as lead and copper that will be discussed later in the presentation. It is a measure of the effectiveness of the corrosion control treatment in water systems. The best available technology, or BAT, refers to the treatment technology that has demonstrated consistent removal of a target contaminant. This term applies to technology available for water treatment to reach compliance with MCLs. Using the BAT methods, the EPA will use this information when determining an MCL and whether an MCL can be lowered. The DLR, or the detection limit for reporting, is the lowest analyte concentration that can be reported with confidence for a specific method. And that's usually a laboratory method. Next slide, please. So the public health goal reports must contain certain elements. It must state which contaminants have been detected above the public health goal or above the MCLG for a contaminant for which no public health goal exists. It must explain the potential health effects of those contaminants. It must discuss the best available technology for bringing those contaminant levels below the corresponding public health goal or MCLG. And finally, it must also give a cost estimate for best available technology application to reduce the contaminant level below the corresponding public health goal or MCLG. Next page, please. So public health goals of consideration for the reporting period of 2019 through 2021 include arsenic, fluoride, lead and copper, perchlorate, total chloroform, and radionuclides. Please keep in mind that not every system exceeded the public health goal. Therefore, some contaminants may not have been detected in every system. Next page, please. The first contaminant under consideration is arsenic. Arsenic occurs naturally in rocks, soil, water, air, plants, and animals. It can be further released through natural activities such as volcanic actions, erosion of rocks, and forest fires. For the Santa Clarita system, the highest level was 2.3 parts per billion, which is just above the detection limit of reporting of 2, but below the MCL of 10. No samples exceeded the MCL of 10 parts per billion. Next slide. In the Valencia system, the highest concentration for arsenic was 3.1 parts per billion. Next slide, please. In the three Newhall systems that have wells, which are Castaic, Newhall, and Pine Tree, only Pine Tree had a detectable value of 5 parts per billion. Castaic and Newhall wells were below the detection limit of reporting of 2. Next slide, please. Potential health effects over many years of exposure to arsenic is cancer of the bladder, lungs, skin, kidneys, nasal passages, liver, and prostate. Next slide, please. So the best available technology for arsenic include reverse osmosis, ion exchange, and coagulation and filtration with ferric sulfate. Excuse me. Next slide, please. The next contaminant under consideration is fluoride. Valencia system had one result of 0.95 parts per million, and the public health goal is 1. The concentration is below the MCL of 4. The other systems were below the public health goal of 1. Next slide, please. Potential health effects of fluoride. Adults exposed to excessive consumption of fluoride over a lifetime may have increased likelihood of bone fractures. Children aged 8 or younger exposed to excessive amounts of fluoride have an increased chance of developing pits in their tooth enamel. However, for prevention of tooth decay, there are beneficial effects that can extend through a lifespan. Next slide, please. The best available technology for fluoride is reverse osmosis. Next slide. The next contaminant under consideration is lead. The action level for lead is 15 parts per billion, and the public health goal is set well below at 0.2 parts per billion. It is important to note that all the well sources for SCV water were below the detection limit for reporting. So all reporting with a positive detection were inside the customer's residence. This slide shows the Santa Clarita's 90th percentile results at the customer's tap were less than 5 parts per billion. 50 samples were taken and only 1 sample came back at the action level. There is no results above the action level. Next slide, please. Valencia's 90th percentile results at the customer's tap was less than 5 parts per billion, respectfully. Of the 50 samples collected inside the resident's house, no results were at or above the action level. Next slide. For Newhall, the number of samples that were collected by each system depends on the system population. For Castaic and Tesoro, we collect 20 samples, and at Pine Tree and Newhall, we collect 30 samples. For Castaic, the 90th percentile result at the customer's tap was less than 5 parts per billion, which is below the public health goal. Of the 20 samples that were collected, 0 samples were at or above the action level. For Newhall's 90th percentile results at the customer's tap was a 6.6 parts per billion. Out of the 30 samples that were collected, 2 samples were either at or above the action level. And then, in the Pine Tree system, the 90th percentile results at the customer's tap was less than 5 parts per billion. 30 samples were collected, 2 were either at or above the action level. For the Tesoro system, the 90th percentile result at the customer's tap was less than 5 parts per billion. 20 samples were collected, zero samples were above or at the action level. Next page, please. So the potential health effects for lead. Infants and children who drink water containing lead in excess of the action level could experience delays in their physical and mental development. Adults who drink water containing lead over many years could develop kidney problems, high blood pressure, and may be at an increased level or increased risk of getting cancer. The DDW states that lead in drinking water is rarely the cause of lead poisoning. Next slide, please. The next contaminant under consideration is copper. The action level for copper is 1,300 parts per billion, and the public health goal is set well below at 300 parts per billion. It is important to note that all well sources for SEV water were below the detection limit for reporting, which is the purpose of the public health goal report. For Santa Clarita systems, the 90th percentile results at the customer's cap were 200 parts per billion, respectively. Of the 50 samples collected, no samples were above the action level. Next slide, please. Valencia's 90th percentile results at the customer's cap was 270 parts per billion. Of the 50 samples collected inside the resident's house, no results were at or above the action level for copper. Next slide. For a Castaic system, the 90th percentile results at the customer's tap was 160 parts per billion, which is below the public health goal. Of the 20 samples collected, zero samples were above the action level. In Newhall's system, the 90th percentile results at the customer's tap was 1,100 parts per billion. Out of the 30 samples collected, two samples were above the action level. Pine Tree's 90th percentile result at the customer's tap was 1,300 parts per billion. 30 samples were collected. Two samples were either at or above the action level. Tesoro's system results at the customer's tap was 200 parts per billion. 20 samples were collected. Zero samples were above the action level. Next slide, please. The potential health effects for copper. Copper is an essential nutrient required by humans. However, people who drink elevated levels of copper could experience intestinal upset, liver damage, and/or kidney failure or damage. The best available technology for lead and copper is corrosion-controlled treatments. SEV water supplies water characterized as non-aggressive and non-corrosive, and therefore has optimal corrosion control for the division of drinking water. Next slide, please. And now I will hand this off to Dean Takashima.
Thank you, Jenny. So I will be starting off with perchlorate. Generally, perchlorate and its salts are used in manufacturing of rocket propellants, missiles, fireworks, and other such explosives. Their uses tend to release perchlorate in the environment, and this valley has had a history of such activities. So for perchlorate, it has an MCL of 6 parts per billion, a public health goal at 1 part per billion, and a detection limit for reporting at 2 parts per billion. In the Valencia water system, the highest level detected at a well was 6 parts per billion. Next slide, please. For the Newhall water divisions, the highest level that was detected at a well was 4.1 parts per billion. Next slide. And there were no detections for any Santa Clarita wells. So this is why you do not see a slide for Santa Clarita. So the possible exposure to perchlorate in high dosages can interfere with one's iodide uptake in the thyroid gland, leading to a reduction of hormones in the thyroid. And these hormones help regulate the body's rate at which we use calories for affecting our weight and health and heart rate. So in children, this is critical for normal growth and development of the central nervous system. Next slide, please. And at this time, the best available technology for perchlorate is reverse osmosis and ion exchange. Next slide, please. Total coliforms, this describes a group of bacteria that is naturally occurring in soil and plants and materials and is usually not harmful. We will monitor for total coliforms to help us use as indicators to tell if there's pathogens present within the system. But by itself, this does not imply that the water is contaminated, but it can reveal that there may be some harmful bacteria present. So in the event that there is a total coliform present, we then will test for E. coli. Next slide, please. So for the systems taking more than 40 samples a month, their maximum contaminant level must be under 5%. This is calculated by dividing the positive total coliform samples by the total number of samples taken in that month. And then the maximum contaminant goal is 0%. So for Santa Clarita in the years of 2019 to 2021, 4,733 samples were taken. And of those samples, in July of 2020, there was one total coliform present, which represents 0.81% of the total samples for the month. Next slide, please. For Valencia, in that same time period, there was 4,226 samples collected. In the year of 2020, in May, there were two positive results, which resulted in 1.75% of the month's total coliform positives. And then there was another, and then one positive in July of 2021. And that resulted in a 0.9% for the month. Next slide, please. Now, Newhall is calculated a bit differently, differently than Santa Clarita and Valencia, because they collect less than 40 samples a month. For systems like this, we do not use the percentage for compliance. To stay within compliance for these systems, they have to have less than two coliform positives. So throughout the same time period of 2019 to 2021, in the Pine Tree system, there was only one positive in the year of 2019. And one positive in the year of 2020. Castaic had none. And then for the Newhall system, there was only one positive in the year of 2019. In the year of 2021, there were no total coliform positives. Next slide, please. Now, the health effects related to total coliforms generally, as I said, are not harmful. However, the pathogens associated with total coliforms can cause diarrhea, cramps, nausea, headaches, and fatigue. Next slide, please. And the ways that we control the total coliforms or prevent possible total coliforms is placement and strategical placement and location of constructing the wells. We also disinfect the raw water as it comes into the system and maintain a residual as it's in the system. And then we also maintenance our system and equipment, which is proper backflow prevention and disinfecting new lines before we place them into service. Next slide, please. Okay, I will then be going over radionuclides. So radionuclides is a test for gross alpha and uranium. They have separate MCLs and MCLGs. So the MCL for gross alpha is 15 picocuries, while the uranium is 20 picocuries. The MCL goals for both are zero. The public health goals for gross alpha is zero, while uranium is 0.43. And the detection limit for reporting is 3 for gross alpha, while for uranium, it is 1. So in the Santa Clarita system, we collected 4 samples in the years of 2019 through 21, and it resulted in a high for gross alpha of 7.1 and for uranium, 5.6. Next slide, please. In the Valencia system, we collected 7 samples in this time period and resulted in a 6.6 for gross alpha and a 5.1 for uranium. Next slide, please. And for the separate systems for Newhall, we collected 8 samples in total. In Castaic, we did not have to collect any gross alpha samples for this period, but we did get a sample for uranium of 1.4. Newhall it was below the detectable limit for reporting for gross alpha, while uranium was a 3.5. Pine Tree had 11 for gross alpha and a 9.3 for uranium. Next slide. Some of the potential health effects related to drinking water that contains an excess of alpha, beta emitters, or uranium in excess over many years can cause an increase of cancer. Next slide, please. And at this moment, the best available technology for controlling radionuclides is ion exchange and reverse osmosis. And next slide. And now Ryan will be handling over consumer conference reports.
Thank you, Dean and Jenny. You guys did a great job in presenting that information. We've finished the portion where we're talking about public health goals, and now we're on to the section that was by director request, some additional information. Last year, I presented the consumer confidence report, and it's not something we normally do, but back by popular demand, here I am. And I think in the future, what we're going to plan on doing is making this a normal part, maybe every 2 or 3 years, coming through and discussing the consumer confidence report and what that means for our agency and how we work together as an agency to be transparent with our customers. Next slide, please. So what is the consumer confidence report? The consumer confidence report is comprised of a few different sections. One, it provides water quality data to customers. And that's, if you were to look at our consumer confidence report, it's right in the center of the report, and it's a large table. I have a slide next one. It'll show that information a little bit more. The other section provides information on source of supply. So that's usually a text portion within the document. The consumer confidence report also provides information on emerging contaminants. So there's a section within the consumer confidence report on that. And the last portion is provides SAB water general information. So that's just where our board meetings are, what times they are, how to get a hold of us, and additional information if people need questions answered. So going back to us having numerous systems, we have to present our consumer confidence report in that way as well. Eventually, we'd like to move forward and be looked at by Division of Drinking Water as one system. But until then, we have to present our information separately. But we have worked in the past with Los Angeles Water Works District 36 and plan to do so in the future too. So their information is included along with our 7 other different systems within the consumer confidence report. Next slide, please. This slide gives you a better idea of some of the information that's included into the table within the consumer confidence report. You'll see within the table, the left-hand column gives you a list of the different constituents that we've monitored for. Then there's information about the maximum contaminant level, a public health goal, and the detection limit for reporting for each one of those constituents. If you move on to the right of that table, you'll see each one of our systems broken out into 3 separate or into different columns. Each system has 3 columns, each reporting different values, one being a minimum level of that constituent being monitored in the system. The next one is the maximum level that was detected in that system. And the typical is an average of what was detected in that system over the previous year. We also try to do a good job of disseminating all the alphabet soup that can be water quality. So we try to provide all the definitions that we can in abbreviations and the units that we use. To help the layperson understand water quality a little bit better. So that is included in the consumer confidence report too. Next slide, please. So the text portion within the consumer confidence report, you can see here an example of where our water comes from. It gives a general overview of our water portfolio. So we have groundwater, imported water, recycled water, and stored and bank water. It gives the customer a good idea of how their water makeup is and where it comes from. And then we have chemicals in the news. So those are either chemicals of concern that that residents might want to know more about, or we might have emerging contaminants in this section as well too. And overall, it's an idea of trying to get as much information to customers in a discernible way as possible so they can feel more confident about their water supply. And our public information office has done a great job with this consumer confidence report and taking it from its infancy to where it is now. And it's continuing to evolve and become more and more user-friendly and in an effort to be more transparent with our customers. Next slide, please. So the Consumer Confidence Report is due by July 1st of each year, and that's reporting on the previous year's information. So for example, this year, 2022, we reported on the 2021 calendar year. So that's the data that we include. It covers this, like I said, the sampling from the previous year. It was previously distributed through hard copies. So we sent direct hard copies of the Consumer Confidence Report to all customers. But I think about 7 years ago, it was allowed to do electronic delivery in order to not waste paper. Because a lot of times what happens is that Consumer Confidence Report would be stuffed in with junk mail and people would throw it away. So there is an option for direct mailer, but what we've done these past few years is for those customers receiving e-bills, we do email direct notices to those customers where they have a direct link they can click on and access the Consumer Confidence Report on our website. Or customers who still receive paper bills, we provide a one-page bill insert that talks about what the Consumer Confidence Report is and a web address that they can access the Consumer Confidence Report. Not only can they access the Consumer Confidence Report of the current year, or I guess it was the previous year's data, but the current Consumer Confidence Report, but they'll have access to previous year's Consumer Confidence Reports too. So if they wanted to compare data, or if they wanted to look at emerging contaminants over a time period, they have all that access to them too. And that's housed on our website under the water quality section. Next slide, please. The next director request was to talk about the UCMR, or the Unregulated Contaminant Monitoring Rule. And this was part of the 1996 Safe Drinking Water Act amendment. It required the US EPA to require sampling of emerging contaminants without regulatory standards every 5 years. So every 5 years, EPA comes up with a group of 30 emerging contaminants that they require water systems of a certain size to monitor for these different constituents. The first UCMR began in 2001 and monitoring finished in 2005. Currently, we are preparing for the fifth round, UCMR 5. The monitoring for that will take place between 2023 and 2025. We just finished our assessment and submitted our sampling schedule to EPA. The UCMR 5 includes 29 PFAS chemicals and lithium. So that's the 30 chemicals we're going to be looking at over the next few years. The EPA uses UCMR data to determine if regulation under the Safe Drinking Water Act is warranted. It's kind of like the first step in collecting data, and they use that data to start deciding if a constituent should be monitored or not. Next slide, please. Some of these contaminants that came out of the UCMR 3 were PFAS. So the first samples were collected under UCMR 3 between 2013 and 2015. So this slide here is kind of a timeline of where we are as it relates to PFAS. So 2013, 2015, UCMR 3, we do the monitoring, upload the data to EPA's website. And then based on that data in 2016, the EPA issued a lifetime health advisory level, or LHAL, for a combined PFOA and PFOS of 70 nanograms per liter or parts per trillion. So they combined those two chemicals and said combined, they shouldn't exceed 70 parts per trillion. Later on in 2018, the Division of Drinking Water, so EPA federal level, DDW on a state level, issued interim notification levels of 14 and 13 nanograms per liter for PFOA and PFOS respectively. Later on, DDW issued the first orders to collect samples in March of 2019. It was at this time they also adopted a response level for PFOA and PFOS, going back to that lifetime health advisory level of the combined 70 nanograms per liter. And it was at this time that we first began monitoring regularly for PFAS chemicals within Santa Cruz Valley. Initially, it was just a select group of wells, and the wells that we were required to monitor were based upon that UCMR3 data. So if they had detections or in close proximity to wells that had detections under UCMR3, DDW said, okay, you guys have to monitor for these wells. Other systems that had firefighting training facilities, or if they had airports in their system, if they had wells in close proximity to those facilities, then they were required to monitor those wells. So not everyone at this time, March 2019, is monitoring. It's just a select group of public water systems and a select group of wells within those public water systems. Later on in 2019, SCV Water, we proactively began sampling all wells for PFAS chemicals. And that was in direct response to what we initially found. So that first round of monitoring, we received detections higher than we expected. And at that time, the DLR, or the detection limit for reporting, was lower than we initially monitored for under UCMR3. So we saw constituents, these PFAS constituents, where we didn't expect to see them. And so SCV Water staff, led by Matt, decided it's time to monitor all of our wells to see the depth and breadth of this PFAS issue that we're possibly faced with. Later on in February 2020, DDW issued response levels of 10 and 40 nanograms per liter for PFOA and PFOS respectively. So at this time, this broke out those two chemicals individually, whereas before the response level was combined. Now these response levels were individualized, and response levels are at which level the DDW asks that a public water system or advises a public water system to take that water source out of service. Then 2021, OEHA issues draft public health goals for PFOA at 0.007 nanograms per liter and for PFOS at 1 nanogram per liter. 0.007 is 70 parts per quadrillion or 0.007 parts per trillion. Most recently in 2022, EPA issues a health interim lifetime health advisory level for PFOA at 0.004 nanograms per liter and for PFOS at 0.02 nanograms per liter. It's important to note that these levels are well below what we can look for in an analytical chemistry. These are, as Jenny had mentioned before, these are our limits based upon possible health effects and are derived mathematically. The LHAL for PFBS was set at 2,000 nanograms per liter, and for the Gen X chemical is 10 nanograms per liter. Next slide, please. Which brings us to this page right here. This is kind of a good overview. All of the federal levels, at the federal level, US EPA uses non-regulatory lifetime health-based information or lifetime health advisory levels to assist with developing regulatory standard MCLs. And this is kind of what Jenny had mentioned before. They're going to use these health advisory levels to help develop the MCLs that will be enforceable levels later on in the future. Similarly, at the state level, OEHA develops public health goals, which are non-regulatory lifetime health-based levels, and they use these public health goals to assist in developing regulatory standards, or MCLs, too. Health advisory levels and public health goals are set at no observable adverse health level, or NOEL, the point of no observable health effects. So it's a process in developing an MCL. First, you say, okay, what is the no risk level? And then you start taking into other considerations. What can we treat this down to? What can our analytical chemistry look at? How low levels of these chemicals in water? What are the costs at treating these? And that's what it helps form the maximum contaminant level. So right now, where we are is US EPA, they have the LHAL at 0.004 nanograms per liter for PFOA, 0.02 for PFOS, 2000 nanograms per liter for PFBS, 10 nanograms per liter for Gen X, and they haven't said anything for PFHXS yet. On a state level, OEHA and DDW have set a draft public health goal for 0.007 nanograms per liter for PFOA, 1 nanogram per liter as a draft public health goal for PFOS, nothing for PFBS, nothing for Gen X, and a proposed notification level for PFHXS at 2 nanograms per liter, and a proposed response level of 20 nanograms per liter for PFHXS also. So that's a, you know, blazing going through, looking at PFAS. I know Mike is preparing a more in-depth overview of where we've come and where we're going and the steps that we've taken with PFAS and what our goals are and what we're doing to combat these contaminants. But that will come at a later board meeting. Next slide, please. I don't have anything else, but if there's any questions, Jenny, Dean, or I would be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Jenny. And thank you, Dean, for your presentation. At this time, I would ask, are there any public comments? I do not have any written public comment cards. Do we have any member of the public online who would like to comment?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up to board questions. Director Guzay.
I do try to restrain myself, but this was the best presentation I've heard on this probably ever. And I just want to thank the staff for doing this. Mr. Bai, the summary at the end, I thought was especially good. Ms. Anderson and Mr. Takashima, the data presentation, the charts answered all questions in one chart, which is great. And then the way you were saying the number of samples that had a positive reading versus none of them, I think in some of them, it was like 2 out of 40, or the different statements that you were providing as you were summarizing the charts was fabulous. So from a very data and acronym heavy topic, I thought this was one of the best ways I've heard it presented that was not confusing. And I really appreciate hearing this. So sorry to jump the frontal line, but I was getting really excited as we were going. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Guzay. Director Ozahosky, our Vice President Ozahosky.
I certainly want to echo Director Guzay's sentiment. Great presentation. Ms. Anderson, Mr. Takashima, hope to see you again during these presentations. I do have two questions. So, Mr. Bai, so UCMR 5 won't be available after 2025, but the EPA is moving forward with the PFAS National Drinking Water Regulation later in the fall of this year. What can we expect from that?
I think we have to wait for direction from EPA or DDW. We can speculate. I know that the orders from DDW are possibly coming out in the future. which would require either additional monitoring or reset the response or notification levels. But we can only speculate at this time. We have to wait for the orders to come through.
Okay, understood. And my second question is regarding your sub-department. I know that you, your immediate supervisor is Mr. Alvord. How does your sub-department of water quality interact with the water quality laboratory? How do you guys work together?
Yeah, we work closely with Jeff Colaline and his staff. We do all the field monitoring and they do all the analyzing, not all, but a good portion of our day-to-day analyzing. I mean, they do all of our PFAS monitoring, all of our total coliform monitoring, a good portion of that. So yeah, water quality is one of those areas where you work closely with a lot of different departments. You work well with engineering. I work Shadi, who's coming up in a few presentations, almost on a daily basis. We work together with, you know, just about every department, engineering, inspection. It's a cooperative effort, and water quality seems to fall somewhere in the middle.
Okay, understood. And again, great presentation. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you. Dr. Plannenbeck.
So I thought this was a good presentation of a complicated issue also, but I have some suggestions to make. You know, for anybody that's been in this valley for a long time, they remember all the closed wells from perchlorate. And as you will undoubtedly remember too, that the first public health goal or MCL, I don't remember which it was now, was set at 18. And so that's one of the things that, and then they realized that 18 was too high and they put it way down to 6. And that caused several wells to be closed. And one of the ways we are meeting this is not that our water is clean, but that we are either putting on a wellhead treatment or we have closed the well. And so it's what I'm trying to do is ensure public trust in the information that the water agency is given. So it concerns me when there is a statement made that sounds to me like, and maybe I didn't hear it correctly, that, you know, we don't have any wells that are, we have one well that's 6 or something like that. Well, we have a lot of wells that are higher than the public health goal, that are higher than 6 parts per billion. They're just closed or they're on wellhead treatment. So I think that you could maybe add to your presentation that we do have this problem in this valley, and that we are making sure the public is being safeguarded, that their health is being safeguarded by either closing the well or putting on wellhead treatment. It's not that the wells are clean. And I think that's a big issue, because you want to really have the trust of the people. And anybody that's been in this valley for a long time knows that we've had a water pollution issue, that we were served water that was very high. I have thyroid problems. I was in the Newhall area when we were getting all that water from the Saugus Well 1 and 2 before we knew perchlorate was a problem. So that's why people worry. And then the other thing is that they worry when the public health goal starts out high and then it goes low. And that's actually what's happened with PFAS. And that's why I was really glad that our general manager took in 2019, the step of closing those wells, and that the board has approved pretty substantial funding to put wellhead treatment on the wells. I think we've really, really tried hard to keep the public health, to safeguard the public health. But I have some other questions too. About lead. I know lead has been an issue in the Newhall area because I've received notice to have my lead come in, be tested. And I see that it's at the tap, which means are these older houses and they're still using lead fixtures. But I was kind of concerned that Newhall area was so much higher. Did you determine, you checked at the tap and then you check also in the pipe so you know it's the tap, And are those residents being informed that they should change their plumbing fixtures? That's a question that I had. And then I should just go through all the questions. I think I talked about the perchlorate already. Yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to say is just be careful maybe about saying that the wells are all clean when everybody knows they're not. And there's probably, I know what you were trying to say, but there's probably a way to say it that gives people a better understanding of what's happening when they read in the paper that we have water pollution. So I guess that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I'll also add my thanks very much, or thank you very much to Mr. Bai, Ms. Anderson, and Mr. Takashima for the presentation and the great information. I do hear from time to time, unfortunately, in the community from people that our water is not safe to drink. And because of that, I feel it is actually very helpful to have this information presented on a somewhat annual basis. Or regular basis, I should say, so that it does give members of the public to come and hear the information and ask questions if they would like to. So thank you for including that information. I also want to say I appreciate adding the public health goals for transparency's sake. I do have a lot of questions, but given the time we are at right now, I'm going to hold some of them and ask if I could perhaps reach out to somebody on staff, if you can let me know who to do that to. I will be happy to, okay, I see you raising your hand.
Yeah,
I'll be happy to do that after, but can I throw a handful out right now? I'll just throw out the list and then you can answer them after. One of them is, since the PFAS treatment facilities are using reverse osmosis technology to remove the contaminant, are we expecting the levels of most of the contaminants that were highlighted in this presentation today to decrease as the wells are then coming back online with the PFAS treatment facilities added back on? So that's my first question. Secondly, the high levels of perchlorate found in the Valencia Water Division, and I know the data was for 2019 to 2021, but I wanted to see, has that been taken down? Is that part of the well systems that was taken down? Okay, I'm seeing heads nodding. Okay, thank you. And then you mentioned that data for the Newhall division is not required to be reported. And if I missed why, could you please repeat that? And then how many wells do we have online today that do have detectable PFAS in them that has water that's still being served? And then last question is, are the PFAS treatment facilities that are going in now also going to be able to treat for these newer generations, the PFBS, Gen X, and PFHXS? That's it.
And I would like to hear the answer to those questions, if it's possible, and also my one about the lead fixtures.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I might have to come back to you with the PFAS, the number of detectable wells within the system. I'd have to look at that data. I'll have to get back with you on that one, but I can answer the rest of the questions. Director Plenbeck's question about lead in Newhall, were the customers notified? Yes, we are required to notify customers if they had lead levels above the action level. We provide all the water quality data from customer monitoring. That's part of the requirement. And we have to do so within a specified time limit too. So those customers were notified. As to the reason behind it, I would guess it would be aging private plumbing. And depending on where they purchased their plumbing from and the age of the plumbing, it might have a more of a chance to leach out some of these lead chemicals. What we've seen a lot of times is it's usually a faucet, an old faucet or something like that. It's not generally within their piping itself. It's leaching out from the plumbing fixtures themselves. Does that answer your question?
Well, do you tell them that?
Yes. And there's specified language about how they can reduce their exposure. So flushing, normally when we do lead and copper monitoring, it's required that the water sits within the customer's pipes for 6 hours before they take their sample. So one method is to reduce that lead exposure is to flush their pipes for a few minutes before consuming that water, using that water, and that will eliminate the possibility of any of that water that is sitting in their fixtures leaching out lead to be flushed out, and they have fresh water coming from the main into their homes that does not have any lead. Is that good?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. I just was really concerned that they be told about the plumbing issue.
Yeah.
Ryan, this is Matt. There was one other question I think Director Glambeck had in that same series on lead. You mentioned wanting to know whether we also sample out in the street to make sure that it's not in our pipes. It's really in the fixtures in the home. And I thought you should address that so it's clear.
Yes. Yeah, we do source water monitoring. So that's at the wells. There is nothing that is monitored for lead or copper within the distribution system.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And then go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Ryan. Go ahead.
I was going to answer some of Director Armitage's questions. PFAS, we use ion exchange for treatment. And I don't know as far as I don't know if we've really identified any specific plume, which is a little different than perchlorate. Perchlorate, we've identified a plume in our Sagos aquifer, and there is remediation efforts both at the Whitaker bromide site, but also in remediating that plume within our Sagos aquifer. I don't think we've identified the source of PFAS, and so I don't know if we can definitively say that over a period of time, PFAS reduction will happen within the valley. As far as we know, we're kind of treating the symptoms rather than the cause at this point. Does that answer your question about that?
Not really, but that's okay. I'll just follow up with you on that separately.
Yeah, I don't know if we expect anything. I mean, we only have a short period of data that we've been looking at. And some of the wells, we've seen consistent PFAS levels, like where we have treatment at the end wells. Those are pretty consistent numbers across the board. We haven't seen any reduction, but it's such a short period of time that we've been monitoring for. I don't know if we have enough data to make a trend and see if there's any reduction over a period of time. And then the question about perchlorate, the detection for at 6 parts per billion, that was our Q2 well, which has since been taken. As soon as we found that 6 parts per billion, it was taken offline, and it has been outfitted for treatment, and we were working with Division of Drinking Water to permit that well to bring it back to service.
Which well was that?
Q2.
Oh, okay.
I think my notes are a little bit messy after that. What were the other questions? I'm sorry.
You know what? It's okay. It's getting so late. I'll just reach out to you.
Okay.
And get the rest of my questions answered that way. I don't want to take up more time, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Very good. Director Brownstein.
I have a quick question. First of all, thank you guys so much. You made it a relatively easier way to understand all of this complicated stuff. But I was wondering if the consumer confidence report was sent out also in Spanish, or if there's a translation somewhere. So as a bilingual person, I just know that even though I read everything in English and I can understand, there's, when it comes to technical stuff, sometimes my native tongue is just a little bit easier to grasp things. So just putting that out there.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, we do send out the notices both in English and in Spanish, and we have a Spanish translation online as well.
Thank you.
All right. We have any other questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, I want to thank staff for the comprehensive presentation. We appreciate it very much. But at this time, we'd like to move on. I'd like to move on to item. Let's see. We are now at Okay. Item six, approval of the consent calendar. You have before you four items on the consent calendar tonight. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
So moved, Director Cooper.
Motion by Director Cooper.
Second, Gutzeit.
Second by Director Gutzeit. We have any public comment on the consent calendar?
We do not.
Very good. I have no written cards on the consent calendar. Is there any other questions or discussion from the board? Director Armitage.
Just a super quick comment. I just wanted to thank Mr. Dickens in his memo for item 6.3. He included the strategic plan goal and objective that the project meets. And so I very much appreciated that. Thank you.
Very good. Seeing no further discussion, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Plambeck.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Armitage. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
Yes.
And President Martin.
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved, and that's resolution number, that includes resolution number SCV-289.
Very good. Thank you, Board. We move on to item seven, action items for approval. You have two on our agenda for tonight. I would launch right into item 7.1, unless General Manager Stone has anything he'd like to say as introduction.
Just in the sense of brevity, we'll move right into it. It does pertain to PFAS, as you'll hear.
Very good. Thank you. I think Mr. Byrne needs an anti-aircraft gun.
I apologize. Place. There's a mosquito that's been buzzing me, so I apologize.
All right. Very good. So item 7.1, presented tonight by Shadi Vader, is to approve a resolution for a construction contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation and a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for engineering services during construction and a purchase order to MWH Constructors for construction management and inspection services for the Santa Clara and Hondi Well PFAS groundwater treatment project. Take it away, Shadi.
All right. Great. Thank you so much, President Martin, and good evening, everybody. This is Shadi Bader, Syrian engineer. Before we get started, I just want to extend my deepest condolences to the Gladbach family and to the SCV Water family as well for the loss of Director Jerry Gladbach. Jerry will be truly missed. So with that, the item right in front of you tonight is to award the construction contract to Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for the site construction of the Santa Clara and Hanby Wells PFAS groundwater treatment project. As the NWells are nearing close to 19 months of service and the construction of the Valley Center wells almost complete, Santa Clara and Hanby wells are the next sets of wells slated for construction to restore some of the groundwater production that was lost due to PFAS. The Board of Directors approved the purchase of the long lead items for this project back at its January 4th, 2022 board meeting. The vessels and back filters are currently being fabricated and will be ready for delivery in a few months. So next slide, please. Here's a location map showing the Santa Clara and Hanby wells and the red hatched areas. And in the blue hatched area is the part of the Sand Canyon pump station where the improvements will take place. The Santa Clara well is located at 27100 Furnival Avenue and is the red hatched area on the top right next to the blue area, and was completed in 2009 and can produce up to 1,500 gallons of drinking water. Hanby Well is located at 26930 Ruther Avenue and can produce up to 950 gallons of drinking water. Both wells supply a portion of the Hanby Zone. Next slide, please. So here's a site layout for the project. This sheet shows the proposed treatment, the treatment train with various improvements at the Sand Canyon pump station. The project includes upgrading the two well motorheads, well rehab for the existing two wells, the addition of 3 bag filters, 2 12-diameter ion exchange vessels filled with resin media, and a chemical injection station and building. This treatment train is very similar to what we have right now at the NWALs and what's being constructed at Valley Center Well. We will also install a new well collector line that will bring water from the Hamby Well to the Sand Canyon Pump Station for treatment. Next slide, please. So here's a 3D rendering showing the components we just talked about. Groundwater will be pumped from the Santa Clara and Hamby Wells, and then will pass through the back filters before entering the ion exchange vessels, where the resin media will trap and remove PFAS to non-detect limits. Then a dose of disinfection chemicals will be applied to the finished effluent prior to entering our distribution system. Next slide, please. So this project was advertised on Planet Bids between March 17, 2022 to June 1st of 2022. The project was also advertised in the Signal newspaper on March 19th, March 26th, and March 31st. Bids were electronically received and opened on Planet Bids at 2 p.m. on June 1st of 2022. We received 6 construction bids, with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation came in as the lowest apparent bidder at $8,486,950. The engineer's estimate for this project is around $9 million. We are also pleased to report that this project will also receive an IRWIM grant in the amount of $3 million. So this will actually offset some of the construction costs here in front of you this evening. I would also like to note that this project supports SCV Water's strategic plan, Objective D.2, which is to proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts to water supply reliability. For example, VOCs, perchlorate, and PFAS, etc. Next slide, please, April. So Hazen and Sawyer, the designer and the engineer of record for this project, has provided the proposal in front of you to provide engineering services during construction in an amount not to exceed $500,000. Next slide, please. MWH Constructors also submitted a proposal to provide construction management and inspection services during construction in the amount not to exceed $700,000. Both Hazen and Sawyer and MWH Constructors will be on a time and materials basis. Next slide, please. Sawyer's anticipated project schedule for the Santa Clara and Hamby Wells. We presented this at the July 7th Engineering and Operations Committee. I just saw this is supposed to be 2022, not 2021. I apologize about that mistake. Then this evening, we're presenting to you, to the Board of Directors. And if you choose to proceed, we anticipate issuing a notice to proceed to the contractor around the beginning of August of 2022. We're allowing the 365 calendar days, which will put the completion of this project around September of 2023. Next slide, please. So with that, staff recommends that the Board of Directors first adopt a resolution awarding a construction contract to Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for the Santa Clara and Hamby Wells PFAS groundwater treatment project in an amount not to exceed $8,486,950. Second, to authorize the general manager to execute a purchase order for engineering services during construction with Hazen and Sawyer for an amount not to exceed $500,000. And lastly, to authorize the general manager to execute a purchase order for construction management and inspection services with MWH Constructors for an amount not to exceed $700,000. So with that, I have completed my presentation, and I'll bring it back to you, President Martin. Thank you.
Thank you, Shadi. Excellent presentation. I do have one written public comment card from Cam Noltemar. So, Ms. Noltemar, if you'd like to come forward and make your comment.
Cam Noltemar, yes, I've been watching PFAS come into our water system for years. We've lived out here since the city, before the city was even formed. What irritates me is, where is it coming from? Did anyone answer that? Nobody asked the questions. You just go on. Oh, okay. So what if it's $8 million? Who do you think is paying for that? Every one of us sitting out here that have to use water. We don't drink your water. We have it for years. Wouldn't touch it. Don't cook with it. And I'm getting a little bit sick of this. I'll say, oh, well, so it's another $8 million. Where is it coming from? Can any of you answer that? Nobody has ever asked the question. Is it just something that shows up because of the chemicals being used by everybody in this area? And why aren't you asking them to pay for it? Why don't you find the source and stop this nonsense? It's very, very irritating because I don't hear it from any of you. I haven't for years. And I know there's going to come a time when hopefully we will be able to decide your future up there. And if you don't start doing something to put the expense from the source instead of our pocketbooks, we'll be eliminating a lot of you until we find out someone sitting up there that will do that. It always amazes me. You're talking about $8 million here. Like, well, we've got to get it out of our water. No, just don't open those wells. Just don't use it. Shut them all down. And then see where you stand. I mean, it's so irritating. It's such a lack of leadership. And for me, I sit out here and I get very perturbed. And you finished your comments, and I didn't hear any comments about, well, where's its source? Can't we go after them?
Thank you, Ms. Miltmore, for your public comment.
It's time you wake up and do it.
Thank you, Ms. Miltmore, for your comment. You've raised this question multiple times in the past, and you've gotten multiple responses from the general manager. We are pursuing legal action against the manufacturers of the chemicals that caused the PFAS contamination. At this late hour, I won't ask the general manager to again respond unless he wants to do so, but thank you for your public comment. We don't have any other written cards. Do we have any members of the public online that would like to make a public comment?
We do not.
Thank you very much. So you have the item before you. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. This item was reviewed at the Planning or the Engineering and Operations Committee. Quite a discussion followed about it. I think the one thing that's really starting to show up here is the sticker shock of what PFAS contamination is going to cost us. It's about $10 million per location that we're going to have to install PFAS treatment. And with that, it came with the committee's recommendation, and I would so move staff recommendation on this one.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? Do we have a second on Director Armitage?
Thank you. Just a couple comments and one question. Again, want to thank you for stating the strategic plan objectives that this meets. I just want to say yay to the grants team for finding that we can apply $3 million of IRWM grant funding to this. I am supportive because we need to remove the PFAS from our groundwater so that it is safe or continues to be safe. And then the only question I have is just please briefly remind us why it's necessary to contract this work out.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Shadi?
Yes. Thank you so much for that question, Director Armitage. You know, some of this work cannot be done internally. Our O&M staff right now are pretty busy with a normal workload. And a lot of this workload is also is very specialized, right? Installation of that kind of much concrete. We don't do that much in-house. Will need to be contracted out. And it's just the type of work that that's included in PFAS treatment. It's very specialized. We'll need a specialized contractor. And the good thing about the contractor that submitted, you know, the lowest bid, they do a lot of PFAS projects. And actually, they did a project for us here, the first one in California. They did the NOLs and they did a pretty good job at it. They completed successfully. So that gives us some type of comfort that they're going to be doing this project as well if you guys, if the board chooses to proceed with it. But just because of the type of work involved here, Director Armitage, you know, it cannot be done internally. Maybe at a later date it can be, but at this point, our O&M staff are pretty busy with the normal workload.
Thank you.
Any other, Director Ford?
I want to thank staff for a good presentation and especially being awarded a grant for this work. One quick question, there was a 365-day requirement for construction. Is that our internal requirement or is that a requirement of the grant funding?
Hey, Director Ford. No, that's actually our requirement. And the number of days how we came up with it is based on previous experience. We also look at the engineer record to recommend a duration, right? And we try to build in some cushion, you know, for the COVID delays that we've seen lately. So that's how we came up with the 365 days, is to account for all the delays that could be, you know, we could be anticipated. So we feel pretty comfortable about the 365 days to be completed within that time frame.
Okay. Thank you, Shadi. And with that, I would second Director Cooper's motion.
Very good. Thank you, Director Ford. Are there any other questions or comments? Director Goodside.
Actually, I had a very similar question to Director Ford. 365 days, is that in their contract that they need to perform within that time? Because I do know there's a lot of delays and, you know, are they contractually required to complete in 365, you know, barring unforeseen circumstances, but, you know, staffing levels and all that, is that contractually on them or is it just our scheduling for 365?
That's actually in the contract, Director Goodside. It says it right there in the contract that they have to perform the work within 365 days. So that's, you know, that's what we told the contractor. And as you may know, that every contract in California is supposed to actually outline the limit. That's something that we've done for the past 20 years plus. Every construction contract that we put out always outlines an end date. So we have to actually put that, how many work days or how many calendar days. In our agency here at CV Water, we use calendar days. So every contract we push out, we advertise, we always post how many days we anticipate this work to be completed. So before we come up with that number, we have to be realistic too. We can't tell the contractor, hey, you have to finish within 60 days when it takes 100 days, right? So that's something that we look into very, very comfortably. And actually, when we do our constructability review, we also check with the construction manager to make sure that that number is actually realistic. So I hope that answered your question, Director.
It does. Thank you for that background information.
You're welcome.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Director Planback will be returning momentarily. But unless there's any other comment, I'd like to make a comment and thank staff. I think it was the quality of the bid documents that staff put out there resulted in an outstanding team between the contractor, the construction manager, and the engineer that's going to be providing construction support. Having some experience with all of this team. And obviously, Pacific Hydrotech did the work on the NWELs, right, Shadi?
Yes, President Martin, that's correct. And so I we think were pretty happy with their product at the end of the day. And
Very good.
We do feel comfortable with them providing excellent work. And tell you the truth, anybody on that list would have done a great job for us. But, you know, Pacific Hydrotech did provide the lowest bid, and we feel pretty comfortable about their bid.
Very good. I thought as you put together an excellent team, and I want to thank staff's efforts that resulted in that. So we have a motion and a second. Director Planbeck is back with us. So, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Vice President Orzechowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-290.
I just want to apologize for running out. That's asthma, not COVID.
All right. Thank you, Board. Thank you, staff. We move on to item 7.2, which is discussion and possible action regarding vacant Division 3 board seat. And our presenter tonight is Mr. Joe Byrne, our legal counsel. Mr. Byrne.
Great. Thank you, President Martin. I feel like we were just here recently, and I think, unfortunately, we're going to be here again soon. But the board is aware, based upon information provided in what's in the staff report, that Director Atkins has submitted his resignation. As a result, the board, starting tomorrow, will have 60 days to decide whether to appoint somebody or whether to call an election. And as outlined in the staff report, if there's no action that's taken, then the Board of Supervisors would then, after 60 days, if no action's taken, have 30 days in which to make an appointment themselves. If they took no action, then we would be required to call an election. Given that Director Atkins was no longer an initial board member because he had been elected at the last election, there does not exist an option to eliminate the seat. Given the timing of his resignation and creation of the vacancy, whomever, if the board were to decide to make an appointment, whomever would fill that seat or be appointed that seat would fulfill the remainder of the term until 2024. The threshold vote for making a decision to appoint is 6 members, given the current number of remaining directors that are on the board. I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, it's the 3 options that are outlined I will note the staff report with regards to the calling of a special election. It would be the election in March, there are costs associated with that, and just wanted to identify that as an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. We do not have any public comment cards on this item. Do we have any members of the public who wish to comment online, April?
We do not.
Very good. I'd like to add a little something to Mr. Byrne's presentation for the board's consideration. Is our board secretary did contact the registrar's office, and the advice, or rather the information from the registrar, is they can't possibly determine the exact cost of a special election in March. Their words were, quote unquote, it will be very, very, very expensive. So with that in mind, we can open up to questions, comments, and a possible motion on what to do. Director Planbeck.
So is there no way we could consolidate an election with the upcoming election?
Director, Mr. Byrne, answer.
There's not. It's because, past the deadline.
It's right, in the government. And it's purposely, he has not lived in this district for a very long time, and this board knew that many of the people on this board knew he was not here. So I just feel like this board is appointing itself, and that's very wrong. That's a statement I want to make right now.
Okay. Director Armitage.
So I'd like to get a little more clarification on the March 7th, 2023 election date that's quoted in this memo. How did you get that date? Is that a California primary date? for 2023, or where did March 7th, 2023 come from?
I believe that came from the registrar's office as the next scheduled election.
So is it considered a special election if we call for an election, if we fold into the primary?
It's not really, you're really calling an election, not a special. So it's not going to be held at a separate time. It'll be held at the next scheduled election, which happens to be in March.
So would the cost associated that be any different than had the resignation come in before June 30th and we put it onto the November 2022 ballot? Is there a difference in cost between those two scenarios?
My understanding it would be significant, because the general election in November, we're sharing the cost of the election with all of the other entities that have elections that are being held at that time. I know April can maybe speak to it. She had the conversation with the registrar's office, but that's the general answer, yeah.
So I'm still trying to understand the difference. So the difference is there's more other entities to share with in a general versus a primary. That's correct. The difference. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for answering that. I'll just say that this board is supposed to be an oversight body, made up of people who live in the community and are chosen by their fellow community members, to represent them through an election process. And back in March of this year, we were all made aware of the fact that if Director Atkins had honorably resigned by midnight of June 30th, that this agency would have had the time that it needed to put the paperwork in, to put his seat back onto the November 2022 ballot, so that voters could choose who represents Division 3 at no additional cost to this agency, and therefore the ratepayers. So that option was eliminated by the fact that Director Atkins submitted his resignation a mere 21 days past that deadline that he was very well aware of, as was the rest of the board. That's 21 days too late to be respectful to our democratic election process. And he's not even here tonight, which is supposed to be his last day on this board. So, you know, I think it's a shame. And this is the second time I feel like this board is going through the same process since I've come on in the short amount of time. And I think it's unfortunate. Thank you.
Director Cooper.
You know, what I see is this board isn't doing anything more than abiding by the rules and regulations that council has told us. The board has nothing to do when Mr. Atkins decided to resign. That was all up to Director Atkins. That's not the board that has anything to do with that. Our choice now is whether to fill a position or let the county fill the position, or go to a special election, which would be extremely expensive and not fair to the people in this community to pay that kind of expense. So it had nothing to do with the board. That was purely Mr. Atkins when he decided that he had finally moved. That's when he came up with.
Director Kelly.
No disrespect intended for the question, but is this going to be virtually the exact same thing that we would be discussing regarding Vice President Gladbach's position?
We will have the same options with former Director Gladbach's position. However, his seat is on the election for November. So there's no question that if we did decide to appoint someone to fulfill the remainder of the term, they would only serve until the end of this year. And whomever was elected in November would come into that role as of January 1.
Okay, so it's not the same. I was thinking he was 24, and therefore we would possibly have two people running in a special election. But okay, thank you.
Director Bronstein.
So I, too, am feeling a little uncomfortable
with the fact that we are I understand that having a special election would be extremely unfair for our taxpayers because they have to fit that bill and it's a hefty one. And I think that it's extremely unfair that they have to choose between getting the chance to vote for someone to represent them or money. Like, we kind of put them in this pickle. And, you know, we've already appointed one director and there's two other positions that are open. And I honestly just feel very uncomfortable with us having potentially three appointed directors. That's a quarter of our board. And I'm not saying that anyone here had control over Director Atkins' actions, and at the same time, we were all we all knew what the deadline was. And I mean, we really were just put in an impossible situation, in my opinion, right now. Either we don't let the public choose who represents them, or we ask them to fit a big bill. It's just, it's really unfortunate.
Well, we don't know what the bill is yet. That's one thing I'd like to say.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Vice President Ozahusky.
Yeah, I do feel the same sentiment presented by Director Bronstein and Director Armitage, but at the same time, Director Cooper does make a point. You know, we are at this point, and we have to make a decision on the best interest of our ratepayers. Now, regarding Director Atkins and some of those comments that were levied against him, I would like to point out that he called this city home since 1966. He's a graduate from Hart High School. He went to COC. And I don't think we went over any sort of accomplishments that that can be attributed to him when he served on the water board and our legacy water boards. So I'm going to take this time to read some of his accomplishments. He served as president of New Hope County Water District on several occasions. He assisted former director Dan Mortensen in making New Hope County Water District being nearly debt-free. He assisted with project resulting in replacement of New Hope H quarters with a gold LEED certified building. He was part of a decision to double the size of the current Rio Vista water treatment plant. He was part of the decision to join the Sites Reservoir project. He served as a member of the board of directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Groundwater Sustainability Agency. He took part in restructuring of water governance in Santa Clarita, which resulted in combining Castaic and U-Haul into one agency. He served on AQUA as a local government and water quality committees and as the Region 8 committee liaison. And most notable accomplishments recently was he was a strong voice and advocate for the restoration of Bouquet Canyon Creek. So let's not debate his his additions to Santa Clarita and on the water board. That's my statement as of right now. Back to you, President Martin.
Director Kelly.
I think although the accomplishments are well noted, I don't think it has any bearing on our decision. But what I would like to say is we have a recommendation of the three scenarios, but we've also been given 60 days to make a decision. And I would like to see this brought forward to the August, I believe it's 15th meeting, which is 30 days. And would still give us 30 days time afterwards to fulfill our goal and give everybody the opportunity to think about it, discuss it, and come back and vote at that time. And if you need that as a motion, I'll be glad to make it so.
And I will second it because I think we need the information about how much the election's going to cost.
I would say that the 30 days is not adequate for the full process to be able to play it out and complete it within the 60 days. We've worked through this number of times on the timing on we vote tonight to whatever our action is. If it's to delay 30 days, then the clock is already running on our 60-day period. So did you make a motion to... Okay, so you did make a motion?
I did make a motion, and I believe the comment is we have 60 days to take an action, not to complete the process.
No, Mr. Byrne, would you like to clarify that?
We would, if we wanted to either call an election or appoint, have to make a decision within 60 days.
Correct.
Right. No, on actually appointing somebody. Correct. So what action to take is just starting the internal process of, you know, April noticing and collecting applications and whatnot. So we need to actually have appointed someone, called an election after 60 days. If we do nothing, it goes to the county.
This is Tom Bunn, and I wanted to make a point regarding the cost. Ms. Jacobs can confirm this because she's the one that talked to them, but she asked several times if she could get an estimate, a ballpark estimate, any kind of an estimate. And that's when he came up with very, very, very expensive. So hundreds of thousands, certainly.
It would be very, very difficult for him to give me an exact amount or even close because he doesn't know. All he said was, if you do a special election, it will cost a lot of money. And he kept saying, very, very, very expensive. It won't be $100,000. It would be a lot more because they have all this work that they have to do. And it's one agency that's paying for it, which is us. And he has no idea if anybody else is going to have anything else that's going to run on that particular day. So he can't say one way or another how much it will cost, other than it will cost the agency quite a bit of money.
Director Cooper.
I think our standard election, when we're on the regular ballot with everybody else on there, is usually in excess of $500,000. So that's what we budget, and our budget is $500,000 for the election. So this would be substantially higher than that $500,000. And I don't know what waiting buys us. Do you want to let the county do it? Do you want to do it yourself? Or do you want to spend a lot of money? There's only three decisions in this thing to be made. So I see us moving forward and getting us out of the way. I mean, that's our job. That's what we do. And council is telling us you have three options. And so I don't know what waiting until August does for us. We know it costs a lot of money. And with that, I would make a substitute motion that we go ahead tonight and to fill the position.
Okay, so this is really a motion to amend, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Correct.
That's right. So,
I'll second the substitute motion.
All right, so
I'm seconding the substitute motion, and I am concerned about the time that we would need to advertise and review. So.
But don't the makers of the motion have to accept the substitute motion?
Go ahead, Director Planbeck.
I don't accept it. I would like to say that perhaps we could change it to at least considering it in the special meeting that's coming up.
All right. So Director Byrne, Council Byrne, we need your guidance on this. We do have a motion and a second. We have a motion to amend and a second to amend.
Right.
So, and we have another director who objects to all of it.
Correct. So there is a friendly amendment. If you wanted to accept it, you could. If you don't, then the motion that is most recently on the table, which is the motion to amend with a second, is the motion that's heard. And we went through this when we put together the kind of the rules that Tom and I did maybe 6 months ago. Technically, the first vote is to vote whether to consider the motion to amend. So right now, we should take a vote whether to consider the motion to amend. If that vote passes, then that is the motion that is on the table for me. If that vote then would fail, then we go back to the original motion.
And how many All votes right. do you need to have it pass or fail?
Majority of the votes.
Vice President Ozahoski, go ahead.
I am concerned about time here. So I think Director Cooper and Director Goodsad bring up a good point here. Director Kelly, what would you consider in your in more time to deliberate this?
I'm sorry, what do you mean?
You would like 30 days to consider all the three options that are within our purview.
30 days was an arbitrary number, but I feel that everything has happened so fast, not everybody has had all the information. And even if we put it off to the next board meeting, I would be content with that. But the reality is we do have 60 days to make it.
We have 60 days to make a decision and go with the appointment.
That's correct, which can all be done in one day, as we've already seen in the last appointment with Maria Goodside.
I think, what about the process? Mr. Byrne, appointment?
I mean, if this is all part of a discussion to convince Director Kelly to accept a friendly amendment, then that could be okay. Otherwise, I think we should take a vote on on the motion to amend. And if that then is on the table, then we'll have discussion.
Okay, understood. I don't believe we have enough time to consider it and then go through the entire process.
What is the vote threshold for the motion to amend?
A majority of the directors here.
Excuse me?
A majority. Or is it
the remaining directors or the majority of the full board?
It would be 7, given that we have,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 6 to appoint, and for our general action, it's 7.
Including the,
it's the if number we were
to make a motion to appoint, that would require 7 votes.
No, the motion to appoint is 6, because that in statute says it's the remaining directors. Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've that's been our policy in the past, that all decisions other than the appointment and replacement and the decision to proceed on that have been based upon the number of seats that are still on the board. The motion to appoint or call an election, specifically in the vacancy statutes and the government code, say that the remaining directors will make that decision. So that's a simple majority of the remaining directors, which in this case would be 6.
Okay. But the motion to amend would require 7 votes.
Technically, it would, yeah.
All right. Call the Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Wait a minute. Mr. President.
Director Cooper.
It's just a comment that Mr. Kelly made is that we could do this all in one night. We can't. Is we have to advertise for people to apply. And that takes a few weeks to do that. So unless we go ahead now and say that we want to fill the position, we can't fill it in one night, because when we make the decision to fill it, then April can go out and advertise to fill it. So it's not a one-night process.
And just to add to that as well, just for the board's consideration, we have to complete the process within that 60 days. And if not, then it does go to the Board of Supervisors. So we have 60 days to complete the process from the date of the resignation.
All right, unless there's further discussion, let's Director Kelly.
Just like a clarification on Ms. Jacobs' comments, how long did it take us to go through the process to where we appointed Director Goodside? 45 days, 40 days, 60 days?
It was very close to that 60-day time period, because we had, keep in mind, once we appoint, we still have to do a background check. And that can take a week to 2 weeks. And I have to swear them in within that 60-day period.
Thank you.
And that was rushed through as well because of the timing of all that. And we had to have the special, and we want to give the public as much time as necessary or that we can, so that anybody who's considering running for the Division III seat can do that.
Mr. Byrne.
Director Martin, I'm sitting here thinking about the voting threshold. And I think for practical purposes, I think a majority of the remaining directors at six would work, because that's what the main motion would require to pass. So if I'm thinking through logically, if let's say the motion to amend did not pass, then the motion on the table would have a six vote majority to determine whether to pass or not. So I think the same threshold would be fine to apply unless there's an objection.
So the threshold for motion to amend is six or seven?
I'm saying, I think in this instance, when the underlying motion has a six vote threshold, I think it's okay to have it be six. Yeah. I'm sorry to make it confusing, or Director.
Council, Mr. President, and members of the board, at my peril, I have an idea. It's clear there are two questions that have been put forth. One is to not move forward tonight, and the other is to move forward tonight. And because of the process of a motion to amend, you have to vote on whether to even discuss it before you vote on it. I'm wondering if it might be efficient to vote on the first motion to see if there's even sufficient votes to move it forward, and then consider a second motion if that weren't the case. Obviously, that would be at the consensus or pleasure of the group here, but it might speed things up.
In order to do that, you have to withdraw your motion to amend. All right?
Yes, I'll withdraw my second too.
I think it's a good practice.
All right, motion to amend has been withdrawn.
Well, could we do a new motion to amend and discuss this at the special meeting on June 26th, or whenever it was, July 26th, I think you called it for?
I would like to go ahead and vote on the original motion that's to delay this to a future date.
President Martin, can I just be clear on what exactly that motion was? Was it to delay it till the next, to that second meeting in August, or was it to delay it 30 days? Just so I'm clear on exactly what the motion is.
I mentioned 30 days, but I actually also mentioned the second meeting. So for clarification, it would be the second meeting in August.
Thank you.
All right. So I'm not sure I picked up everything you said, April.
I was just clarifying what the original motion was, and that was to delay it to the August 16th board meeting. So that's what we are voting on right now.
So in order to make that date, we need to move forward tonight, right?
We do, but please note that if we wait that, you have 30 days to post in the paper, 30 days only. And then once it runs for 2 weeks, you have to set up a time to interview and then make the interview, make the appointment, check the background. So that gives you less than 30 days to do so. Just something to note. Are we ready to vote?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, as I call your name, please state how you vote.
Can you repeat the motion that we're voting on?
The motion is to delay this vote until August 16th.
All right.
Okay, Director Ford, how do you vote?
No.
Director Gutzeit, how do you vote?
No.
Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
I'm going to abstain from this, which I hope is a no vote, because we really could just do this at the special meeting and give the public a little time to weigh in on this, which I think is something really important.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes. Just making sure.
Yes. Director Cooper, how do you vote?
No.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
No.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Oh, I want to change my vote to yes. Can I do that? Because I think I was thinking backwards. I wanted to be voting yes, not voting no.
So Please show for the record that Director Planbeck changed her vote to yes. Vice President Ozohowski, how do you vote?
No.
President Martin?
No.
The amended motion does fail. We had a majority vote of 6. The original motion failed.
Mr. Byrne.
Yeah, the original motion fails. So now there's nothing on the table for for future discussion.
Director Cooper.
I would make the motion that we go ahead and fill the position.
I'd like to make a substitute motion that we fill.
I have to get a second before a substitute motion can even.
We're having fun with Robert's rules.
We have a second on Director Cooper's motion.
I second that motion.
We have a motion and a second on the motion to appoint. Move forward with an appointment, President.
Okay. I would like to make a substitute motion that we consider this at the special meeting that's already been called for July 26th so that the public has a chance to weigh in. Right. That would still give us an adequate time.
But that's really a motion to amend, correct?
Yeah,
correct.
Motion, whatever you want to call it, motion to amend.
Correct.
Okay. Do you have a second on your motion to amend?
I'll go ahead and second it.
So, Mr. Byrne.
So I think at this point, we'll just vote on that motion. There's discussion, obviously.
I have a comment on that. The public was properly noticed that it was going to be on the agenda tonight. The public received the standard notice for this item. It's not an emergency item.
So we need to vote on the motion to amend.
Correct.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
No.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
No.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Gutzeit, how do you vote?
No.
Director or Vice President Ozohowski, how do you vote?
No.
President Martin, how do you vote?
No.
Again, this motion fails for the amended motion to
move
it
to. Go back to the original motion.
Yeah, back to the
original motion. Director Cooper's motion. Please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
No.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
No.
Director Gutzeit, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Ozohowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes.
Thank you very much, Board. Director Kelly.
It's not that negative, Mr. President. I just like to thank all the board members for their consideration, for their understanding on what our goals were, and for making the decisions that you feel is best. And with that, I really, really appreciate the effort and the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Move on to item 8, status of recycled water. The presenter tonight is Assistant General Manager Steve Cole. Mr. Cole.
Can I ask a question, President Martin? Do we have a standing stop at 9 o'clock? Or what is the status of our 9 o'clock?
I do, but it's my option. So
okay,
unless the board is, I think we've been waiting for this presentation on recycled water for a while. I think it's an important presentation, and I'd like to have Mr. Cole make the presentation. We can expedite the remaining items if the board so chooses, but I would like to hear this presentation.
Yeah, I'll just offer I can have no GM report tonight easily.
Very good.
To help with that.
Mr. Cole.
Thank you, President Martin. I know everybody is excited to hear this presentation, so we will run through it. We had some very light items tonight.
This is like dessert after eating the broccoli.
For sure. So happy to run through this with the board. Obviously, the goal tonight is just to get everybody up to speed on our current and planned recycled water program. So we've put a presentation together to try and achieve that. April, next slide. So the outline of the presentation, you're going to find out about some of the background, looking at kind of our role, our agency's role, just from a supply portfolio standpoint. We're going to go into history of recycled water planning and permitting, bring everybody up to speed on where we've been and where we're trying to go. We'll talk about actual projects that are both currently under construction and moving forward, as well as projected projects for the future. And then we're going to also talk a little bit about the costs and schedule, and then wrap up with next steps. Next slide, April. This is a slide that has been around for a long time, and usually it's dropping from most of our presentations, but I thought it was important to share as we start this discussion tonight. And the real discussion revolves around the planning for recycled water and the history of that, and that it used to be, you know, four separate entities looking at how we plan recycled water for the Valley. We did that. It was challenging, knowing who was going to do what, you know, backbone infrastructure. I think you've heard General Manager Stone on his, one of his very first meetings here, having a discussion with a couple of the retail agencies about where the big pipe ends and where the distribution system picks up. And there was never clarity on that. And it really provided challenges for seeing the recycled water program move forward and in an expedited fashion. So I left that slide on here for that purpose. Next slide. Won't spend much time on this. You know, general message here is that recycled water is a portion of our supply portfolio. We are fortunate to have a diverse supply portfolio, and we are looking to expand the recycled water component of that. Next slide, April. Here's another way to look at that. This is basically the urban plan projections for a single dry year projected water supply. So kind of the hardest supply criteria to meet in the urban plan. And this just shows the role that recycled water currently plays and then how it plays into the future. And so that's that purple kind of bar there that you can see growing over time over the planning horizon. And then it has the other kind of sources that come into play during the single dry year projected supplies. Next slide, April. So planning history and legal challenges, touched a little bit on this. There has been a robust, long-range planning exercise with recycled water, and it has gone on for several decades, and it really revolves around a few different planning documents. There's been historical recycled water master plans that basically look at the community's ability to use recycled water. There was, I'd say, a first generation and then a more recent generation that's shown on the right there. And you can see that more recent generation had the four different entities, right, on the cover. And that planning document, I think, was a really good exercise. It did map out the recycled water kind of projections for the future, the potential customers in the community. It also started to lay out some considerations for looking at things like indirect potable reuse or direct potable reuse and trying to understand whether those things could be accommodated in our community or not. And it made some recommendations to do that. urban water management plan, as I mentioned earlier, recycled water is included in there in the projections for planned supplies and has been for several planning cycles. And we're going to start working into some of the challenges that are facing recycled water and some of the steps that we're taking to overcome those challenges. Most of you are probably aware that the sanitation districts were challenged on chloride compliance. So that was a lawsuit. And you look at the date on their document there, it reflected again, that's 2013. So it has been a long time in process. That legal challenge has officially wrapped at current. So, and that has recently happened in the last few months. So that chloride project is moving forward. The construction is ongoing. There are portions of the plant improvements that have been done already and are in operation. So mainly the ultraviolet light treatment system so that they don't have to use as much chlorine at the plants. That chlorine has chloride associated with it. So that was one of the main objectives, was getting the reduction in chlorine. But they are also moving forward with a different filtration plan to remove chloride itself, and that construction is underway. Reason I bring it up is originally that 2013 document included recycled water. It included the resource component of the planning out here. And when it got challenged, there was a choice made to separate out the chloride compliance project from kind of the water resource aspect of recycled water for the community. And so that has been a process that's been ongoing, and it definitely stalled out a piece of advancing recycled water for a period of time. And I'll get into a little bit more about what we're doing as we move forward. April, next slide. So regulatory considerations, the delivery of recycled water, I would say, has some of the most overlapping regulatory considerations that there are in the water business. The state board is involved because there are water rights considerations for the water that is discharging into the river. So that is a permit that ultimately has to be achieved through the state board. The regional board gets involved, and that's more on kind of the permitting of the plant and the treatment methodologies that make sure that the water's safe to use. Division of Drinking Water gets more involved in, again, the safety aspect of it and actually delivering to customers and looking at it from that aspect. And then you have to get into the end use, which actually involves LA County Health Department. And then there are a ton of rules and regulations that are necessary to make sure you're serving recycled water in a safe way in the community. And then ultimately, you got to get to the customer. And if they're an existing customer, you got to talk about conversion. And we'll talk through some of those challenges as well. Next slide, April. So I put this slide in there because I do think it takes a village. This is all hands on deck. The staff here at Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency is all in on this. We have standing meetings with the staff every 2 weeks, and we are meeting with the regulatory community on a monthly and quarterly basis. What we found was that we needed to get everybody in the same room because of that overlapping regulatory framework. There was a lot of, that's not my job, that's their job. And I think there's been some major improvements to the way that we are communicating with the regulating community And I think that's going to result in some clarity as we go forward in achieving what we're trying to achieve. You may or may not recall, but the board did approve new staffing for recycled water for the agency. There was a recycled water coordinator position that was authorized in the last budget cycle. We are in the process of recruiting for that currently. Think it's key to having a dedicated staff member that is going to focus on recycled water as we expand our use of it. I put that there again because I don't think that will be the last request that you see from staff over the next few budgeting cycles as we expand our recycled water program. It's going to take dedicated individuals making sure that we are doing it properly and complying with the regulations that we need to. There's a team of consultants that we access right now because of the staff to make sure that we are benefiting from that expert opinions on consultants that have experience in delivering these projects. And then stakeholder, there's every stakeholder you could ever imagine when you go and try and deliver recycled water from the resource aspect all the way to the end user. So from the regulators, customers, developers, non-government organizations, when you get involved with the river. So it hits every stakeholder group. Next slide, April. So our program, we do have an existing program, and it's, I'll say, made up of agreements and permits. This is a slide on the agreements. We do have a standing agreement with the Santa Clarita Valley Sanitation District, and that's basically outlines how we purchase water from them for our existing program. And I'll show you a map on that coming up, hopefully get into some visuals again here. Also have a what's called a fee credit agreement with the Vista Canyon developer for that project. And I'll get into the specifics of Vista Canyon and what the concept of that was. But it's basically the developer paying to install the recycled water infrastructure for the Vista Canyon development and the ability to credit facility capacities because of that activity. So that's still a live agreement, and we are administering it. There is currently on the table Vista Canyon agreement for purchase and sale of recycled water. The plant is operational. Vista Canyon plant is operational. It is generating recycled water. And we are in the final stages of getting the permits approved so that we can deliver that recycled water. This agreement will be an interim agreement that allows us to acquire water out of that plant and deliver it to a select number of customers within that development. Long-term, the city of Santa Clarita will own and operate the Vista Canyon treatment plant. And we will have a agreement with the city of Santa Clarita to acquire the water and deliver it to the community out there. So that's another agreement that is currently being negotiated. Next slide, April. So I mentioned we have agreements, we have permits. So we do have existing permits. There is that 1211 change petition thing that I mentioned earlier. So that's a historical 1211 permit that was acquired in the valley. It's basically for up to 1600 acre feet of reuse, but it is very site specific, and that has its challenges in the new construct of 1211 and how it's being implemented by the state board. And so we have it. We use it for the existing program, but expanding it is really a challenge right now. We've also processed a permit that now the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency holds. That was a permit that originally started with the Valencia Water Company for construction water for recycled. That was a kind of a one-off permit that got established in the last drought cycle. But we had the opportunity to revamp it and renew it under Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency for the same use. And the key there is that you'll see this term start coming in, you know, new drop. And I'm going to get into that and why that's such a big part of what we've been doing to try and make sure we can move our program forward. And then we're in the position of processing permit amendments. I mean, that's where we're at right now. We're making sure that we're getting the proper permits in place so that we can use water at our phases and in the developments that are proceeding. And that's both true at out of the Valencia plant, and it's true out of the Vista Canyon plant. And that's what you see there listed. Next slide, April. So now just kind of orientate you to wastewater treatment. I think most of you are familiar, but just a revamp. The two main LA County Sanitation District plants are the Saugus Water Reclamation Plant and the Valencia Water Reclamation Plant. As I mentioned, the Vista Canyon, what they term a water factory, is also operational now. And then there's a proposal for a Newhall Ranch water recycling plant as that development continues to develop. Next slide, April. Little bit about, let's get into the resource aspect here. Historical wastewater flows. So this is really where what was being, pursued in that environmental document that I mentioned earlier that was subject to legal challenge. And it was really focused on looking at the water that has increased into the valley and has increased into discharge into the river system. And the concept was that we would be able to take that level of water and recycle it, reuse it. Well, the new 1211, I wouldn't say it's new 1211, but I would say the state board is much more proactive in how they are applying the permit requirements. Requires you to do a lot of work before you can take water out of a water course. And that's really kind of the concept there that has to be met. The board has approved our agency moving forward with what's called the California Environmental Flow Framework. That's the kind of the newest concept on how you go through this analysis to look at river flows and what is right for the environment in the river system. So we are moving that forward with the concept of trying to get a number of water that could be reused and withdrawn from the river. But next slide, April. Maybe. No. There it went. So, you know, in the interim, I really wanted to share this with the board, and we've done this a couple times, but bring you fully up to speed, is we developed a what we call a new drop principle or program. And that's really, it was a really unique, thoughtful way of dealing with the permit challenges that we were faced with here in this valley. And it really focuses around water that has not gone to the river system. And so that's water that 1211 says that you can recycle. And so we came up with a concept to do that. April, if you can go to the next slide, we'll kind of just show it. And Cheryl Fowler asked me, did you really mean to keep this slide in there? I said, yes, I did. This is a very specific point in time of what a concept looks like. And I'm extremely proud of our team and our staff in going from a concept in this regulatory environment to delivering it. And we have been able to do that now in our permitting. And so this is a drawing that Dirk Marks actually, after we had a few discussions, doodled out. And you can go to the next slide, April. And then we refined it, right? We started putting the concept into action. Really started working on what it would look like. Next slide, April. And it's really based on this idea that the community is growing. we are going to generate more wastewater flows over time. And there's a delta there of water that will be generated and has not been discharged to the river historically. And so that's kind of that orange graph there of what we're dealing with. I kind of call it the line in the sand approach, meaning that we kept chasing that elusive, you know, idea that we're going to take water out of the river. But in the meantime, you kept putting more water in the river. And so the idea was to make sure that we created an approach that would credit the acknowledgement of this concept in the way that we're planning our water rights going forward. Next slide, April. But it's not simple, as many things aren't nowadays, and it takes a lot of coordination amongst our staff. And so there's calculation methodologies, there's making sure that you're tracking and updating, and so there's a whole flow process. There's been a whole database that has been created to make sure that we are tracking these flows and calculating them and truing them up to make sure that they are correct over time. So just wanted to share that. Next slide. Next slide. So let's get into just a little bit on what our existing recycled water system looks like, and then we'll go into the expansion pieces. The existing system takes water out of the Valencia Water Reclamation Plant. So that's down by Magic Mountain. And it delivers it to customers along the old road. And then the main customer is the golf course on that side of town. So that system has been in place for quite some time now. It's been delivering recycled water. The amounts are roughly around 450 acre feet a year, and the majority of that is the golf course. Next slide, April. So now let's look at a little bit of where we're expanding. Next slide. So there's a few different locations that we're terming near-term expansion of service. Obviously, the Mission Village project, they are installing recycled water facilities as the development proceeds. We have completed the phase 2D project. And so that is awaiting final permit approval and customer conversion. I'll get into those challenges in a little bit. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we've got the Vista Canyon Water Factory, which serves, we'll call it the internal track and external. We got a couple blowups here, I think. April, next slide. So this just gives you a rough idea of the Mission Village first phase of their recycled water system. Next slide. Phase 2D, that's that extension off our existing system. So it's represented here in blue. Main customers there are the schools and the HOAs in the area. Next slide, April. Vista Canyon, and you can see on these slides, I somewhat differentiated between those areas that are being funded by developers versus ones that are being funded by the agency. So that the red box, that's what that represents on this drawing, which is kind of the in-track Vista Canyon. And then you all have heard quite a bit about the phase 2B expansion. It involves that recycled water tank that is in final stages of construction, and hopefully bringing that online not in the too distant future. Also involved the getting over the railroad with the owl and all that stuff too. So that was an interesting challenge of that project, but it is getting close to being finalized. Next slide, April. I wanted to spend some time on conversion because we are actively in this process right now. I believe the board will remember we had quite the robust discussions about how to get customers to convert, right? So we bring a pipe to the service address. The customer has to do some things too. They have to make sure that they have proper signage and that their irrigation systems are separated in a way that it's safe to make sure the recycled water is separated from the potable water system. So there's things to do, especially when you get involved with you know, institutions or things of that nature. And so we came up with an idea. We called it our Purple Prep. This has got Matt Dickens written all over it because it's got a cool acronym. But it basically took those impediments away. It said that the water agency was going to assist and fund conversion and therefore removing the obstacle of getting the end user hooked up. Pretty unique program, honestly, in the state of how we went about that. It's still proving to be extremely challenging to get customers to convert. I think we're going to have some success stories coming up, but it's been a long road. It really has to communicate with the customers the value of the recycled water and what it can provide their communities. We have had some challenges just in the certain HOAs that we're dealing with that we're having to really work hard to get them understanding of the program and that we're trying to good stewards of the resource. And so I just bring this up. This is kind of the main phase we're in now for both phase 2B, which is the extension of Vista Canyon, right? You got the in-track Vista Canyon was kind of easier because it's kind of captive customers right now that are already set up. The extension of phase that Vista Canyon into 2B is going into the existing community. And so that requires HOA conversion. It requires participants to help you navigate that. And the same as for phase 2D, you have the Westridge HOA, you've got the school districts. And so we have been doing a lot of work to get them comfortable and on board with servicing with recycled water. So I want to thank the staff for doing that. They're spending a lot of time and effort on that right now. Next slide, April. So just a, maybe kind of a main overview, next slide. So here's kind of the near-term projects. We talked about, you know, the Mission Village project. Again, that one's easier from the standpoint of the customer because they don't exist. So it's a new customer and new infrastructure that's going in with that. There are some challenges with the way that the health department is viewing what they call dual plumbing. There's some unique things going on there with the product type and the development of how that recycled water service gets served. So some kind of inside baseball there, but we are working through with the regulators to make that work. 2D we talked about, 2B we talked about. The fill station, we are in final design for the fill station, and you will be seeing soon, if you haven't already, I think it's coming soon, the project for the fill station will be before the board. That will allow for recycle fill of trucks, and it'll be really close to the Valencia Water Reclamation Plant. So it's basically an automated fill station. It'll be like a gas station, you put your credit card in and punch your number in and you can get recycled water through that. So I know Court and Shoddy and their group have been really proactive in getting that done. That's going to be quite the, I think, asset going forward. This community still waters a lot of trees with mobile trucks. So it's a need that we're trying to meet with that. Next slide, April. So, and then we'll talk a little bit more about mid and long-term projects. Phase 2C is in active design. We'll call it stage one of phase two. We're breaking that project up into a couple different phases to make it a little bit more achievable. We have received grant funding for that. So we are currently have some grant funding and are looking for additional grant funding right now for that project. Also illustrated on here is what's called a phase 2A project. That would extend out of the Valencia Water Reclamation Plant and terminate at Central Park is the proposed alignment of that. That one's a little bit longer term project, but we are still in the preliminary design phases of that. Next slide, April. This is just another way to look at kind of those projects and how they're funded and what those costs are and some of the delivery dates that we're trying to achieve. You can see many of them are kind of in this final stages. And so it's a matter of getting the permits finished, which I hope are imminent, and then getting the customers signed up. Next slide, April. And here we are. We made it to the end. Next steps, obviously, it's this permitting thing and making sure we're getting that done at all levels. We've got to get the regional board permits, and we got to get DDW to sign off on those. And then we've got to make sure that the end users have the proper agreements with our agency. Talked about the hooking the customers up, Purple Prep. I put an ordinance here, a question mark. I don't know. We toyed around with one of those when we were considering Purple Prep. There are legal framework in the state that if you have recycled water and it is financially achievable, that you are to use it. I've always kind of said, let's do the carrot first, which was Purple Prep, and then it may be something you see us bring back to the board. If we're just not going to be able to get forward, we may need to use different tools to encourage folks. But I really don't like going that direction. But it is an option, and other water agencies use that option to make sure that the resources are used in a sustainable way. Obviously, new drop, that something we're going to continue to track. We report it currently to regional board already under the permit that we do have. So we'll continue to do that. The environmental flow framework for the waters in the river and how those help the environment and finding that right balance between water supply and reuse and the environment. Quick tease on that, the Sand District is moving on to temperature now from chloride. So they will be dealing with a major challenge there on how to basically reduce the temperature of their discharge. And so that is in their new permit requirement specifically, and it has a timeline to it. 8 years is the timeline currently. Evaluating staffing resource, I mentioned that earlier. This is a major effort. It is taking a lot of staff resources right now. We're doing a team approach. We'll continue to do that. But I think you'll see us, as we get a lot of these end user agreements set up, there are requirements on the end users and how they test, how they perform, manage the on-site systems to ensure that over time they're doing it in the right way. And so we will need staffing resources to help in that engagement with our end user customers to make sure that that's happening correctly. And then just lastly, I mean, obviously we're going to continue to try and expand the recycled water system. And I'm going to stop there. I think I allotted half an hour. That was with questions. So it might be a failure. Thank you for your attention. Yep.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for hanging in and completing this presentation. I think it's important for the board to hear and the public to hear. We do have two public comment cards from Mr. and Mrs. Dunn. So I would ask Joan Dunn to come to the podium and make your public comment. Well, Ed's going to go before Joan, so go ahead.
Well, all I can say is congratulations. Such a great, big, massive recycled water program, but none in L.A. County's third largest city, Santa Clarita. The residents of Santa Clarita only produce it. this agency takes it and provides it to someone else. And when you talk about the Sand District charging, they don't have that kind of political makeup. They're not a merchandising organization. They cannot charge. There's a problem there. But we've watched this go on for years, where the recycled water, 30 million gallons per day, what does that come out to, 30 days or a year, dumping it in the river, saving it for someone. Now we begin to see who they're saving it for. There's something wrong with this picture. I don't think it's even legal. We've investigated a couple of agencies. The FBI says it comes under RICO. He says it's called racketeering. I don't know. I guess if they get enough information, they might be able to get the city of Santa Clarita residents to get some of their own water. The city of Santa Clarita residents are paying every cent for this recycled water, and it's going to other people. And well, look at Central Park. Central Park's using drinking water, and the recycled water is within a mile of the plant. It also has the two ag wells. It also has raw state water project that could be gravity fed right from CLWA's or SEV's water down to Central Park. No, you're using $1,000 an acre foot drinking water because it's great income from your Santa Clarita Water Company, and that drinking water is used in Central Park. You're using it anywhere but where the people that are producing it and paying for it. It's kind of a reverse Robin Hood. Take it from the poor and give it to the rich. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Mrs. Dunn, please.
Well, I've been watching this for a lot of years also. What bothers me is that, yes, all of the people from the east of Bokeh Canyon and over, and I said this last meeting, over to, anyway, it's going along the it keeps going, and the direction that I'm looking at, everyone east of these San Fernando Road, I wanted to say that, are not getting that water. Why not get it into the medians? Right now we have these problems with the medians, and we're still giving the medians potable water. And it's a waste of our water. And I have felt that maybe those trees should be irrigated with the trucks that are bringing the recycled water, because eventually the people on the west side, their medians are going to look nice. What's bad? Ours is going to look like the desert. So, and the city of Lancaster recently, several years ago, they decided that they weren't going to be responsible for trees in the medians. Well, I surely hope we don't decide to do that, because after all, the trees are very important. But when I think about the water being wasted on these medians, and there's no talk about us getting that water on the eastern part of Bokeh and San Fernando Road and out to the south. So I think that we really need to be pushing. We are paying for that, the sanitation district to process our water now. But Mission, that's a new process, a new building, new bunch of houses. How come they're all getting it, but we can't? Thank you.
There are no public comments.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Dunn. April, do we have any members of the public online who would like to comment?
There is not.
Very good. Questions or discussion from the board? Director Brownstein.
I have a few. So I'll just starting from a random point, I guess, in my list. I was wondering when the fill, if we have a timeline for the fill station, and if grading will then be able to be done with this, you know, with this recycled water. I was wondering if there was a way to bring it to, so I was wondering if we're only approaching with HOAs with this new prep thing, or if we're also approaching individual people, because sometimes individual people are easier than HOAs. And if there's a way to get it into like Newhall, Sand Canyon area, people there have a lot, like there's a golf course there, like there's a lot of need for recycled water there. I was wondering what eventually we think our capacity, like how much are we going to make from this recycling water, like how much acre feet per year, and what that percentage will be from our total consumption. Hopeful here, but any chance that we ever decide to go potable level with our recycled water? And then I wanted to make sure that I understand why it's challenging to expand our existing 1211. Is it because of the current historical discharge, or if there's something else there? And then, so just so I understand, the Vista Canyon, and I'm guessing Valencia, the Valencia plant, are they both owned by the city? Is that the thing where we, do we always buy water or recycled water from somewhere? I wasn't sure on that. And I think I am done for now.
President Martin, you'd like to
be Yes, go ahead, Mr. Okay. Cole, go ahead.
We'll run through. Thank you very much, Director Brownstein. I think all great questions. And I know in the challenge of putting the presentation together was trying to give enough detail, but there's a lot to it. And so questions are great, and feel free to, you know, contact me offline. Also, I'd be happy to kind of walk you through things. And first one, fill station, looking to get constructing beginning of this next year, and could have it finished. I believe it's about a 6-month construction schedule. So that's the timing on that. Great for grading water. I don't know how, if you've ever seen a grading operation, but it's a difficult thing to achieve. If you're doing a large grading operation, just because of the number of trucks that would be necessary to move the water around, but it can be an option for that. And we're installing the system where multiple trucks can actually hook up at the same time. So it could accommodate something like that, and we'll just have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. Individual people, that is really challenging. And the challenge is when you bring in, so individual residences have potable water service to them. And when you bring in a non-potable source into those situations, a lot of the times the end user doesn't understand the responsibilities that come along with that. And those can be really challenging. Meaning, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, like when I go out and repair my sprinklers in the backyard, if I were to have two sources of water there, I may do that wrong. And there's no way for the water agency to really understand and hold that individual user accountable in that situation. And so that's what I was kind of mentioning. These end user agreements are a key component of making sure that the delivery of recycled water is done safely that way. Not to say that may become a process in the future as things continue to evolve with water resources and scarcity. But currently that is a difficult process to really manage. And one thing, and it kind of touch on your other subject here about, you know, why don't we just bring it everywhere? The challenge there is this is dual infrastructure. So this is a whole new set of infrastructure that needs to be ran through the community. It involves different tanks, different pumps, different pipelines. And so I think what you're trying to see in the phasing that we've laid out right now is a phasing of that takes that into account, is trying to do it economical to deliver the amount of recycled water we think we're going to have from a resource standpoint. And that gets to your next question about what is that number. Currently, the urban plan projects roughly about 9,000 acre feet of recycled water delivery in the community. I think I mentioned earlier, currently we're at 450. So a significant increase from where we're at. As far as overall water supply portfolio, it's probably just best to use, you know, kind of round numbers, the year types change and all that. But it's probably about 10%. The direct potable reuse question, I think it's a great question. I think that's something we'll want to explore with the board about do we want to look at that? The Recycled Water Master Plan kind of teased the subject. There's a whole set of challenges that come with treating to that level of treatment. And the biggest one is that the current treatment methodologies generate brine. And that brine management is a big challenge. And it's the same challenge the Sand District is investing to kind of take care of on the chloride side. But generally that brine is managed if you have large scale treatment with a ocean outfall. And so you do see communities that are closer to the coast that have the ability to discharge to the ocean have done that. There are some examples of brine lines in communities that aren't that far away from here, where communities have invested in a big pipe that goes to the ocean. So that is something that we could explore and look at. It is really expensive, but water resources are getting really expensive. 1211 historical discharge. Yeah, I think you hit on it. That the basic thing is that the state board is really taking a very hardline position now on water courses and the water resources that go into those water courses. So we do have legal right to the water, but so do a lot of other things like public trust and the environment. And so you've got to go through that analysis, and that's what that role that the CEF plays for us to try and help us articulate what the right amount is or isn't for that. And Vista Canyon Plant, yes. So we, the water agency is pretty much stayed out of the wastewater treatment side. So you have LA County Sanitation District that has the Saugus plant, Valencia plant, proposed to probably operate the Newhall branch plant. And then the Vista Canyon is a unique situation. It's more of a what they call a scalping plant. So it takes a portion of the flows, treats them locally, but it's still discharging to the other plants in the valley. But you're scalping a portion of the flows locally and reusing it there locally. That arrangement was an arrangement that was done between the city of Santa Clarita and the developer. And that's under the final stages of kind of transferring that ownership to them. And you'll see the city contract operate that plant. And there's examples throughout the state and other states that do that. There's special entities that contract to provide that maintenance and operation of the plant.
So last question. Mm-hmm. In response to what you said. So are we, because I guess one could say, as we repipe certain areas, we could line, you know, put in an additional pipe, right? You know, as maintenance and stuff like that. Are we limited by the amount of recycled water that we possibly could supply to, like, to make it worth our while to add those purple lines, I guess?
Yeah, I think there are limitations. Yeah, and some of the new drop provides a number that we think is a limitation, and then this idea of doing the studies on the river to truly find out what the future limitations are of bringing more water into that system. But yeah, there will definitely be limitations. A lot of it happens with the way that recycled water is generated versus the demand profile, right? So recycled water is generated all the time. Demand profile is low in the winter, high in the summer. And so there's an accounting there that has to happen to make sure you're trying to match those things up. And generally that's taken care of through storage. But we're talking significant storage.
Thank you so much. I'm probably going to contact you with more questions, but I really appreciate it. It was a really great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Happy to talk more.
Very good. Any other questions, Director Armitage?
Thank you. I'll be quick. Just thank you also for the presentation. I know it's late, but this was really good information. I think it was worth the wait. particularly because I think recycled water is a very important piece of building local resilience. So I'm glad to see plans for growing it. I had similar comments to Director Bronstein about the refill station, so I won't repeat that. I do want to say I do wish that the phase 2A to going to Central Park can move a little faster. And I know you have your list of priorities that you're working with, but I just think it would be such a great project to show the community our commitment to better using and conserving our drinking water and therefore using recycled water for irrigation. I think it would be such a great visual for the community to see that. And then two questions. One is, you mentioned that the Vista Canyon facility right now has recycled water. It's up and running, and we're not able to access it yet. So I'm wondering what they're doing with their recycled water right now. And second question is, it's interesting to me that the city wants to take on management of the new drop, I think if I'm understanding it correctly, the new drop facilities. So I'm wondering why the city and not handing it over to the county, who kind of already does this.
Great. Yes, both questions. So Vista Canyon right now, as I mentioned, it's set up as what's called a scalping plant. So they still have the ability to discharge to the sewer. So currently it treats it and it discharges it to the sewer and it gets treated again at one of the other plants downstream. But the idea was to get the plant up and running. And there's a lot of things that have to shake out during that process to make sure that the treatment standards are being met and those things. And they've done that. There was a recent tour from Division of Drinking Water that involved our staff and the plant operator to make sure they were comfortable with the way that was going. And so that is proceeding. Hopefully soon here we'll have a customer to start using that water. And that was the purpose of kind of that interim contractual arrangement that I mentioned in the presentation. So looking forward to that. I think we're close on that. The city, yeah, I think it's a unique thing for them. It's not that they're doing new drop, it's that they're doing the Vista Canyon plant. And that's a kind of a one-off arrangement that was set up so that development could move forward with a on-site treatment system. So yeah, so it will be interesting for the city as they get into the you know, wastewater treatment side of things. You know, we have a unique situation in this valley where the sanitation district is a little bit different, even though it's part of LA County SAN. It's made up of two members of our city council and one member of the board of supervisors. So, or appointment from the board of supervisors can be. So there's a different structural arrangement to that I would imagine, you know, going forward, there could be some discussions about who should treat or or not treat. But right now, that's the arrangement that's been made.
Director Planbeck.
Okay, it's a fast question. We put in all that purple pipe in Tesoro, as I recall. Didn't they put in purple pipe? No?
Not in Tesoro that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. I thought they had done that. I thought they required them to do that or something.
That was a quick one. Thank you.
Director Ford, go ahead, sir.
Thanks for the presentation. It was well done. It was a lot of information crammed into a 30 minutes. The questions are on us, Steve, so don't worry about that time. The environmental flow framework, which state agency, I'll just go ahead and reel off a couple questions. Environmental flow framework, which state agency will ultimately decide what the appropriate level is, and will that be somewhat binding on the board and Fish and Wildlife? And then incentives that we're offering folks to hook up right now, is it just the discounted rate for recycled water, or is there something else that we offer? And then finally, would we contemplate fill stations at Saugus and or Vista Canyon?
First, on the California Environmental Flow Framework, it really is designed to work with California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So that is the whole objective, right? And because I'm sure you're aware, I mean, that's where this leads. They're kind of the lead agency on the environmental values of the watershed, the river. And any permit that a 1211 has to process goes through them. And that consultation happens directly. And that really is kind of what has evolved with 1211. That necessarily didn't happen before. It happens every time now. And so that's the direct consultation. This process is designed to engage with them, to include their values and the values of the system to make sure that we're going to get permit achievability, basically, at the end of it. Rate discount, currently the water rate, I believe, is a 20% discount off of our regular variable rate. So that is the only discount. The Purple Prep program is there to basically pay for rebate the on-site conversion. So that's the other component of it. So those are kind of partnered together as a incentive. And then fill stations, good question. I know Saugus, it's tight in there. It's a really tight location as far as getting trucks in and out.
Right.
But this, I hadn't thought about it. I think we can think about it. Yeah. And we'll talk about Saugus too. I just know from previous discussions that it's a difficult location.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or Director Gutsa? Go ahead.
A super quick one. I thank Director Ford for asking my question about the incentives. The formation of SCV Water included provision for a community workforce agreement for projects over a certain size. Are we still in the time frame for that? And was that triggered by any of this, or is it going to be triggered by any of it?
That's a great question. Matt, you take that one, because we just had an exchange on this literally just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I can't remember the threshold, but we have had, I believe we've had a couple of projects that are above that threshold. And it was a 5-year term for that agreement. So that consideration of whether to extend or renew that, and probably some retrospective evaluation of how things performed, would be coming due in the next year. Over 500,000. I think it was like 500,000 or a million. So we definitely used it.
Very good. Thank you, Steve and staff, for presentation tonight. I think it was important. I will just ask one question. Is there any recycled water that's available in Santa Clarita that is not presently being used?
That's a tough question to answer. I think there is, we're on the cusp of answering that differently because of the permits, right? As soon as it, and that's what I'm going to link it to, is the permit approval. So I think my answer right now is no. There's okay. None that's not being used, but soon to be, we will have permits in place that will turn on that ability to use more recycled water. I think the direct answer is no.
No, it is my impression that staff's doing everything possible. They're going over and above to try to make this happen. And I appreciate your efforts. So with that, unless we have any further discussion or questions on item 8, we do, we have heard public comment. We now can move on to item 9, but the general manager has already pre-deferred on item 9. Therefore, we can go to committee meeting recap reports. There's only one committee in your packet tonight. That's engineering and operations. Are there any questions or discussion from Director Armitage?
Really quick, the report mentioned the upcoming retirement of Jim Lesterman. So I just wanted to acknowledge that and ask that our best wishes into his retirement are passed on to him from us. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public comment, April, on the committee reports?
There is not.
Very good. Thank you. That I will see on item 11, I will see general managers bet and match it, and I will defer the president's report and ask April to please just send it out to the board as you always do now. That's your routine. So please send out this information. I will mention the request that went out today for the board to respond to the question about a special board meeting on the 26th, a week from tonight, to consider the vacancy in, as a result of Vice President Glanbeck's passing. So with that, are there any, well, there's no reports, so there's no public comment. We move to item 12, AB 1234 reports. You have some in your packet. Are there any other AB 1234 reports tonight? Director Armitage.
Thank you. So today there was a meeting of the executive board of the Special District Association of North Los Angeles County. It was virtual, and it was just a debrief from the last general membership meeting in June and some planning for the next general membership meeting in September. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other AB 1234s? Tonight, looking left, looking right, I don't see any other hands raised for AB 1234. Are there any public comments on the AB 1234, April?
There is not.
Very good. We can move then to item 13, director requests for future agenda items. Director Kelly.
The water conservation reports are given to Water Resource Committee. And based on some of the Brown Act restrictions, we were trying to get some information at finance as to how well we're doing on water conservation, broken down between single family users, multi-users, and commercial and industry. So my request is the possibility of Water Resource doing some type of a presentation to the full board so we can see the type of conservation numbers that we're generating.
Thank you. Director Planbeck.
And maybe that could be combined with an update on whether we're be able to get our transfer water from Kern County area, because I understood that there was some issue with not being able to transfer it from one of the storage areas.
Okay. I'll leave that to the staff to determine whether they can be combined.
Just point out, and I did hear that question come up in finance at the meeting last night. Chair Kelly, leave last night. We're acting chair. The chairs keep moving. So you can discuss it. You would just need to agendize it. As long as it can be discussed in two committees, so long as it's agendized and in a public meeting. Well, I think we clarified that on an earlier question that came up, and council clarified that.
I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
When it comes up at your thought at the moment.
So what we could do is
agendize it for the next one.
Yeah, we could agendize to have Matt come in and just give a quick update, agendize on what we know about that breakdown on the conservation.
Would that be actually, I prefer that it comes to the full board so everybody can hear the conservation numbers.
Okay.
And it would only take a few minutes. And I don't know that we need a presentation from anybody, some numbers or conversation, but I'll leave that up to you.
Okay,
but we'll work. I think it's something that's important for the full board to know about the conservation efforts.
Very good.
Thank you, though.
Yeah. Very good. And then I don't want to lose Director Planback's add-on there, but it was a little different issue, which was the Kern groundwater recovery. And what's the status of that?
I understood from Sarah, and it was just sort of a passing thing that, well, we're having trouble getting with the water, but they've promised to give it to us, but there's an issue. And I wonder if we could have the issue explained or how we're handling, you know, maybe a drought update, I guess, is maybe what we need.
Yeah, I think the question was raised. I thought Sarah had responded that there haven't been issues and the programs are performing, but it could be time for an update on both conservation and the operating plan. If the board want to do that, those kind of are kind of companion pieces that we can come in and do.
Yeah. I been trying to attend the Water Resources Committee, but of course I can't speak or ask questions. So if I get confused about something or I don't understand something, I can't ask a question about it.
All right, that's noted. Any other requests? Director Armitage.
We're on future agenda items, right? We're on future agenda. Okay, yeah. Lost track. So I would like to ask for consideration and discussion of the idea of starting a student scholarship in the name of Vice President Gladbach to award to a graduating high school student each year from Santa Clarita Valley who goes on to study water resources in college. And I'm hoping maybe we can find a way to kind of start it with donations so that this doesn't cost the ratepayers anything, and we can just kind of build it with interest so there's no cost to the ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other requests for future agenda items? All right, that brings us to Item 14, which is adjournment in the memory of, and I'll say it correctly because this is the way Vice President Gladbach liked to have his name said, E.G. Jerry Gladbach. Before we adjourn, I want to recognize the efforts that were made by our board secretary to arrange for this special event tonight. I know it extended the length of our meeting, but I think it was important for everyone to have an opportunity to make comments in regard to Jerry and so that Donna can hear those comments and the family can hear those comments. And thank you, April. I know you went above and beyond to set this up, and I appreciate your efforts. So with that, we will adjourn in the memory of E.G. Jerry Gladbach. There'll never be another Jerry Gladbach. Good night, everyone.